Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and my main man, Steve Cochran, has your morning drive at 6. It is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. We're going to talk with Jim Laskowski and Eric Childress about the new movies. And then Eric is going to give us some previews of some of the movies that he saw at Sundance. He saw 30 movies. 30 movies at Sundance. It's crazy. But he always gives us exclusive reviews of some of the good stuff and even some of the bad stuff that that he's seen. And we'll talk to him all about that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And also you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. And subscribe to our podcasts. Our podcasts are very popular, and we thank you for that. And you can subscribe to them for free. Go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe for free, and they will automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So, all right, it is Monday morning. My dad is going to call in and tell a joke, and we're going to, yesterday was the Super Bowl, so we're going to talk a little bit about that, and of course the commercials. We'll run down what were the good ones and what were the bad ones, and maybe talk about some of the other classic Super Bowl commercials from the past. And as always, our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right, let's say hello to my great producer, Dan Shugrue. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Nick. Good to be back.
Good to have you here, man. How you been?
I'm doing all right. Yeah. Doing all right.
Okay. And so the Super Bowl.
Yes.
It was very uneventful.
Definitely not one of the more high-scoring entertaining games.
No, but I mean, again, the Patriots are just ridiculous, man.
They are a machine.
Three out of the last five Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm.
And Brady was his ninth Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what to say, man.
I don't even
know what to say. But it wasn't a very exciting, exciting game.
No touchdowns to the fourth quarter.
Yeah. So, Adam Levine, no shirt.
Yes, he did take off his shirt. Yeah, that's right.
That's fantastic.
He's from California, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. So, anyway, some of the commercials were pretty cool, though. We'll get into that a little bit later on. So there you go. Let me say hello to in the newsroom. It's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, good morning, sir.
How are you?
Doing pretty good. How about you?
All right. Did you watch the game?
I only watched. I think I was definitely in bed before halftime.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I probably my plan was to stay up. Jeannie made some Super Bowl snacks, and we were going to stay up. But it was like you said, it was more of a defensive matchup, which was fun to watch. But yeah, I just lost interest, to be honest. Without the Bears in it, I kind of just lost interest. And
it's also, it was just such a, it was just uneventful, you're watching the game and it's like.
Yeah, to your point, Vic, too, there's exciting defensive matchups, where it's like big hits and teams making big plays, but it didn't even feel like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. This was more of like. From what I was hearing from Romo and just like it was more the defensive plays were, it was basically the two defensive lines just kind of dominated. Like
right.
you said,
yeah.
It wasn't exciting, big hits. It was just more of a, down in the trenches and the defense, won that battle. 13-3. What was it at halftime? Was it 3-0? Is that what it was?
3-0.
Yeah, it was 3-0 through the third.
Second lowest scoring first half in history. And then 13-3, ESPN says, is the lowest scoring Super Bowl ever. I haven't checked that, but I'm assuming they know what they're talking about. So, yeah. And they've been in four out of the last five. Is that right? They lost one.
They lost last year to the Eagles. Yeah,
so they've won three out of the last five. They've been in four of them.
That's crazy. Yeah. Really. It's really crazy. And then I like what they were doing with the, what they were trying to do with the whole East Coast West Coast thing. Where CBS was like showing Boston and the Celtics and the Lakers, and then they were showing the Red Sox and the Dodgers and all that other stuff, and trying to make this this kind of a legit rivalry.
Right.
They're just trying very seriously to get some sort of like rivalry, because I don't think. I mean, was anybody excited for this one, for the Super Bowl?
I think people were hopeful because the Rams were such a high octane offense that they might be able to come up with something to make it interesting. But
you know, with Gurley, the last couple of games he's been in, not much production out of him. I think that kind of took a lot of the steam out of the Rams' engine. You know.
Yeah,
that high-powered offense that we had seen all season—it kind of didn't it kind of trickle off without Gurley. He just wasn't doing much. They say he wasn't hurt, but he just—you haven't seen him get a lot of.
What was the line on the? I mean, who was the Rams were favored, right?
By three.
Favored by three. Okay.
Isn't that funny too, though, that it was an upset? The Patriots upset the Rams, but. The Patriots have been in four out of the last five.
That's
Super
the thing.
Bowls.
That's I know because when I
but yeah, the Rams were picked to win it.
When I heard they were you know the Patriots upset the Rams. I was like, what are you talking about? They're the Patriots.
Yeah, they were the underdog. It's kind of funny now.
It is. It's weird, man. It's really really weird. But that you know you can't argue. You can't argue even that he didn't have a great game. But you can't argue the accomplishments of Tom Brady.
No, you can't.
You know you can't. I mean, you know, like love him or hate him or whatever. I mean, and again, he didn't have a great game. Yeah, he didn't have a great game yesterday.
No touchdowns. No passes.
Yeah. Right, but, you know.
They did have that big one to Gronk that I've watched since.
Oh, my God, that was a dime of a pass. That was, that was a beaut. Real quick, going back to the whole them trying to create a rivalry between the West Coast and the East Coast. I believe, if I heard this correctly, this was the first time ever in history that the two World Series teams and the two Super Bowl teams both came from the same towns.
Oh, is that right?
Because it was the Red Sox Dodgers, and it was the Patriots Rams.
Right. Wow.
So Boston, L.A. in both series.
Wow.
I didn't think of that. Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. All right. Well, we're going to talk about the commercials, though, for sure, and some of my favorites and some of the good ones and some of the memorable commercials that we saw for the Super Bowl this year. And we've got that coming up a little bit later on. But right now we've got a break, and when we come back, Jim and Eric will be here, and we are going to talk about movies. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It is Monday, so that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl commercials. Which ones were your favorites? And maybe some classic Super Bowl commercials from the past. We can chat about that too. But as you know, it is Monday, and that means there's the Monday morning movie reviews. Jim Laskowski and Eric Childress join me each week to talk about the new movies. Not much to talk about this week in terms of new releases, but Eric just got back from Sundance, the Sundance Film Festival, and so he's going to tell us all about the rest of the movies that he saw. And we'll get his thoughts on all of that. Okay, so let me welcome the guys to the show. Eric, welcome back. Eric, we lost Eric. All right, let's say hello to Jim. Jim, are you there?
Yeah, man. Okay. Hope you're feeling better.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been a very, very, just a very, very weird week. So,
indeed.
But now, so we're trying to get Eric back on the line here. And Eric, are you there?
Hello, I'm here.
All right, Eric, welcome back from.
Thank you.
From Sundance.
Yes.
He had to fly in Wednesday night, right?
We ended up not flying in until Thursday.
Yeah.
Our flight got canceled on Wednesday. And we had to scramble to, we got rebooked on Thursday, and gladly we had no problems getting in then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was just such that the weather was just insane.
That's what I heard.
I mean, completely insane. But that's why I knew you were scheduled to come in on Wednesday, and I was thinking to myself, there's no way there's going to be without delays. I mean, thousands of planes were canceled,
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of sweating out since Monday because we knew you guys had the big snowstorm on Monday, and we knew people were getting Southwest flights from Midway were getting canceled, like through Thursday, but we didn't get any notification about our flight until about 10 a.m. on Wednesday.
Wow.
And we had a 5 o'clock flight out, and so like in the middle of a movie, we're all in movies, before we went to the airport, and we get like text messages that the flight got canceled. So then turned into a madhouse.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. It was just so absolutely insane. Starting last Monday with that snowstorm, and then into Friday. I mean, the whole week was just unbelievable.
Yeah, Park City's surprisingly lovely this time of year.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Well. Good. Now everything is back to normal. We think.
I think so.
All right. And then, Eric, you'll tell us all about some of the other movies that you saw at the Sundance Film Festival. But let's start out with reviewing the new movies for this week. Jim, why don't you tell us about Miss Bala?
Okay. Well, this is the latest from Catherine Hardwicke, and in the past, she's portrayed some interesting variations on teen rebellion with the likes of films such as Twilight, of course, Lords of Dogtown, and her breakthrough debut, 13. This time she's decided to try her hand at remaking a film from not too long ago of the same name. Miss Bala is a reworking of an acclaimed 2011 Mexican film that was very loosely based on a real incident. Here, the setting has been shifted to Tijuana, where drug-fueled violence has sort of become an accepted way of life with the cartels, and there's just a lot of conflict and confrontations constantly going on with a variety of players. The main players here are a criminal syndicate run by the brooding, somewhat charismatic Lino, as well as a corrupt police department chief, as well as various factions like the DEA and CIA, of course. And like in the original, our main protagonist here is Gloria, played by Gina Rodriguez in this film, and she is a Los Angeles-based hairdresser. She returns to Tijuana, where she lived as a kid, in order to help her best friend prepare for her shot at a beauty pageant competition. When they're caught in the crossfires of a drug cartel assassination attempt on Tijuana's police chief, the women are separated, with the possibility of her best friend becoming a victim of human trafficking. With her friend sort of nowhere to be found, Gloria begins to place her trust in the wrong people, essentially, with the intent of saving herself and of course her friend, but she ends up getting caught up in the chaos. The main bad guy takes Gloria as a hostage, but then decides to put her to work, sort of getting her to unknowingly position explosives in order to sort of take out rivals, as well as serving as a mule to bring cash into America. She's also asked to lure out a DEA agent who has infiltrated the organization, and all of this under a very watchful eye. And of course, the main bad guy here sort of promises that cooperating with all of this is the only way she will get to see her friend again, insisting that he's not the bad guy in the grand scheme of things, but essentially she just decides, I got to get out of this. She forms an exit strategy that will hopefully not only save her, but the lives of those she cares about, as well as her friend. So it's a little complicated of a plot. A lot happens. The original Miss Bala did at times remind me of kind of like a lesser version of Breaking Bad to some degree, with all these competing factions at play. But it had a lot of intense, visceral moments with a memorable, great character to root for. So it makes sense that you'd want to Americanize this story. At the same time with the original, I remember having to suspend disbelief on a lot of occasions to sort of believe that this woman with very little experience in the world of crime accomplishes some of the things that she manages to accomplish. So I was a little curious to see how this would be updated and revised for American audiences, well knowing that it probably wouldn't achieve the same impact that the Mexican version did. And sadly, it ends up being a massive disappointment in nearly every way. The only bright spot here is that, Gina Rodriguez does the best that she can. She tries to bring some depth and nuance, though I think she is a little too passive at times. Eventually, she does get to kick some butt, and once that occurs, you sort of pep up a little bit. I do think back to the time, Nick, when you called the remake of Let the Right One In a teleported steak version.
Yeah.
That was completely unnecessary. And I didn't quite agree with you on that occasion. I don't know if I've seen a remake that fits that description more perfectly than Miss Bala here. They took it like the hard R-rated version, the original, and just kind of decided to neuter it more or less. And I guess it makes it more digestible for audiences, but definitely not better. Visually, there is not a lot of interesting things going on here. I mean, Hardwood manages to squeeze in a little suspense based on the situations that Gloria finds herself in. But really, the villain here is forgettable. There's just nothing original about this remake. I mean, it should be a really great piece of escapism about female empowerment, but you also sort of just guess how things are going to play out, whether you've seen the original or not. The climax is really asks a lot of you. It elevates Gloria to this like level of superhuman heroics. Like, you know, she's walking in slow motion, wearing an evening gown, and touting a gun. But honestly, even a film like Atomic Blonde had a lot more ingenuity and great set pieces that made it stand out from the crowd, whereas Miss Bala really is one of the more forgettable films I've seen in a while. So I definitely say stick with the original if you're curious about the premise, and just skip the remake entirely.
Okay. All right, that's Miss Bala right there. All right, Eric.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about Velvet Buzzsaw?
Okay. Well, this is the latest film from Dan Gilroy, writer and director Dan Gilroy. His last two films were The Great Nightcrawler and Roman J. Israel Esquire. This film premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, though I did not see it until I got home because it premiered on Netflix just this past Friday, so that's where I watched it. And this movie is set in the California art world. Jake Gyllenhaal stars as a kind of snooty bisexual art critic, friend of his, a female friend who works for an art gallery owner played by Rene Russo, discovers a deceased artist in her apartment complex and a number of paintings that he has left behind, a number of very disturbing paintings, actually. And she basically she steals all of the paintings and then works to figure out a way to put them on display and possibly get them sold. There's something wonky about these paintings and this artist. And as the film goes on, what starts off as what seems to be a satire of the art world actually turns into a movie that is closer in scope to the Final Destination films, as something is going on with this artist that's causing his paintings to, in many ways, come alive, create various other supernatural acts around people who look upon and especially purchase these paintings, and begins to kill them off one by one.
Okay, hang on, Eric. We're going to take a break.
Yeah.
All right, when we come back, we'll find out what everybody thought of this movie, and that's called Velvet Buzzsaw, which is in theaters and on Netflix right now. But we got to take a break for the news, and when we come back, we'll get more thoughts on this movie right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Monday morning, here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Monday morning. And it's Monday, which means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We'll do a little recap of the Super Bowl. And run down the good, the bad, and the awesome commercials from this year and maybe previous years as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Before the break, it is Monday, which means that Jim and Eric are joining me to review the new movies. And we'll also have Eric stick around to give us his wrap up of the Sundance Film Festival, which he just got back from. But before the break, Eric was telling us about a movie called Velvet Buzzsaw, and we want to get these guys back. Jim, welcome back.
Thank you much.
And Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, so continue with Velvet Buzzsaw, Eric.
Yeah, so before the break, I basically gave the plot of the film, and that's pretty much all there is to it. And you know, what you have here is what I thought were two sort of halves of a movie that really don't fit well together, at least not in Gilroy's hands. You know, the stuff that he, you know, purports to, you know, be kind of setting up to do kind of a comic spin on this, the snooty inhabitants of the art world, of artists and gallery owners and critics alike. It doesn't really have much bite to it, and it's not particularly that funny. It's full of just kind of same cliches. John Malkovich plays one of the artists in the film, and he could have been supplanted directly from his role in Art School Confidential, which I think is a much, much better movie about the subject without the horror elements, although there's a serial killer in that movie. But in this one, when the movie transitions into the horror genre, I kept watching the movie trying to figure out exactly what Gilroy's intentions were with this film. I couldn't figure out if he was making a point that horror is a viable art form, or that it's an art form that is actually destroying a greater art that can exist through cinema. It seems like he doesn't seem to have a real fondness for the horror genre because the stuff that occurs later in the film is really not particularly creative in the hands of someone who might not have the quote unquote prestige that Dan Gilroy does. Although if you look at his resume, it's not the most prestigious thing in the world. I think Nightcrawler in many ways might be a fluke at this point. It just seems like this movie would have been completely dismissed offhand as just a failed experiment that really just kind of derails once it goes into the horror genre. Some of the actors, particularly the woman, Zawe Ashton, who plays the woman who discovers the painting, is exceptionally annoying throughout the entire film. Every time she was on screen, I really kind of cringed. Gyllenhaal is doing one of his, he's really trying to, do one of his goofy performances. And while I respect that, it didn't really add much to a movie like Oaksha for me. I thought it was a little too over the top. And I think the same is true here. And again, I could not understand what Gilroy was trying to say about either particular world in this case. The dark stuff's not particularly satiric. The horror stuff is not particularly horrific. It's also full of cliches. By the end of it, I just kind of shrugged my shoulders and, moved on with my day.
All right. Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of with Eric on this one. A failed experiment is a great way to put it. It's just, I really wanted to like this movie more than I did. I wanted to appreciate kind of what he was going for with combining these two ideas and like mixing satire with horror. So, I mean, he did such a great job with Nightcrawler, and I keep hoping that especially with the cast that he has here, you would think that it would come together in a more cohesive way. I also think you just need a more compelling plot. I just don't think just the gimmick of sort of like having, as Eric mentioned, like Final Destination-like kills and turning into a slasher really didn't add much to the proceedings. I just think the execution is off and the balancing of tones is not really there in the hands of Gilroy here. I think, making a scathing indictment of the art world, has been done with something like Art School Confidential, and also a much more interesting dark comedy from, I believe, Sweden a couple years ago called The Square, which kind of tackles some of the same territory. I mean, that wasn't a complete success, but it had really interesting ideas about self-importance and pretension that some artists and critics have when it comes to judging, what is considered art. And, art snobs are a bit of an easy target, and I think, Gyllenhaal and Russo do the best they can. you know, I mean, they get to express themselves in very confrontational manners sometimes, which is kind of entertaining. But Eric's right. The horror elements here did little to impress me. I mean, once I saw that giant phantasm-like sphere, I kind of knew what was going to happen. And, you know, this just turned out to be more of a mixed bag that is kind of like being in a bumper car of tones and ideas just not entirely meshing well together. You know, as a weird curiosity, I think some people might find some enjoyment out of the experience, especially with this ensemble. But I wish it had been like either a stronger critique with a lot more depth, or an even crazier Suspiria-like horror movie that decided to go for broke. Ultimately, I ended up right in the middle on this one, leaning towards not recommending it than recommending it at all.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about this movie either. I think it's a mess. And I really, yeah. I thought the trailer was great, and I was really looking forward to it, considering how much I like Nightcrawler. But yeah, this is just all over the place, and the horror elements don't work, and it never makes up its mind as to what it really wants to be about and what it's trying to say. And then it just gets really downright silly. And I agree with you, Eric. I don't think there seems to be a real condescending attitude that Gilroy has with the material. And I'm trying to figure out why, if he clearly doesn't enjoy horror, why would he make this movie? It doesn't make any sense to me. And it's all over the map, and it's a waste of a great cast. I mean, there's so many good actors in this movie. And it's entirely wasted. And it does. I mean, when you compare, you know, a film from a guy who's really, you know, respected, and you compare it unfavorably to the Final Destination movies, that says a lot right there. And I would take Final Destination 2 over this movie without a question, especially the first.
I would take most of the Final Destination movies over this movie.
I'm picking Final Destination 2 because the first 10 minutes of Final Destination 2 is one of the greatest things ever.
Sure.
So, but yeah, it's on Netflix. You know, I mean, you know, I watched it in two sittings. You know, because I turned it off after a while, and then I was like, all right, I'll go back and finish it. But. Yeah, and I was disappointed too because it's like I said, great cast, and I admire Nightcrawler very much, and I thought the trailer was great. But it's a mess, and none of it comes together cohesively at all. And the performances are just really inconsistent. You know, with Jake Gyllenhaal doing the over the top stuff, and then everybody else, some other people on a different level. Some of the energy is low. It just doesn't come together. It's a mess. So, I do not recommend Velvet Buzzsaw, which is on Netflix now. Okay. Okay. What do we got next week, guys?
We got the Lego Movie 2 is coming out. Mm-hmm. We got the Cold Pursuit.
Which one?
With Liam Neeson.
Oh, Liam Neeson's. Yeah.
Yeah, the remake of In Order of Disappearance, the foreign film. We have What Men Want with Roger Peterson.
Oh.
I don't know how you make a whole movie out of that, because it's like two things, I think. What else? Oh, The Prodigy, the horror movie The Prodigy.
Oh, right, okay.
Creepy kid movie time.
Okay, all right, creepy kid movie. We can't have a winter. We can't go through a winter without a creepy kid movie.
That's right.
That's part of getting through the winter is seeing a creepy kid movie. So,
yep.
All right, well, that's all for next week. Jim, thanks, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, man.
All right,
take care.
Take care. There's Jim. Eric, you hang on, okay?
Sure thing.
All right, Eric's going to hang on, and we are going to talk about Sundance, the Sundance Film Festival. Eric goes every year and gives us exclusive looks at some of the movies that he saw, and we will see in the coming weeks and months ahead. So exclusive reviews from the Sundance Film Festival. But first, we got a break here. So we will take a break when we come back. More Sundance talk with Eric Childress right after this. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl commercials and all that cool stuff as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on Facebook. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Here till 5. And coming up, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell and Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. Eric Childress is hanging out with us. We're going to do box office as well in a little bit. But he just got back from the Sundance Film Festival. And Eric is always kind enough to give us exclusive looks and reviews of some of the films that he saw at the festival. And let's get Eric back on here. Hey, Eric.
Hello.
All right, I'm looking at this list. You saw 30 movies.
30, yeah.
Oh, my God. That
includes two that I got to see because of our cancellation on Wednesday. So I got to sit in two more films.
Yeah, you snuck in a couple more.
That's right.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, you pick where you want to start, and we'll get some reviews from you from the Sundance Film Festival 2019. How was the festival overall?
Well, I mean, I think overall, I mean, again, like the stuff at the top, there's some really good stuff at the top. Overall, I saw more misses than hits, but the ones that that I talked about last week and a few that I'm going to talk about tonight are very high up. And I like very much. So there's really good, a big separation. I only saw a few that I thought were really kind of bottom of the barrel.
Okay.
A lot of mediocre stuff.
Okay. All right. Well, wherever you want to start.
Okay. Well, I do want to start with one of the films that I got to see because of that layover. And it's a film called The Farewell. This stars Awkwafina, who made kind of a big splash last year in both Ocean's 8 and Crazy Rich Asians on the big screen, and now she comes to Sundance with this film where she plays a pianist in New York. I was waiting for a fellowship grant in New York, and she discovers from her Chinese-American family living in the city that her beloved grandmother has been diagnosed with late-stage cancer. They're very close, they have a very close relationship, but the family does not want to tell the grandmother about this diagnosis. I guess in China there is a kind of a tradition, at least with some families, that they believe that telling someone about such a diagnosis is actually worse than the diagnosis itself, because they kind of die of fear of that. So the family ends up having an excuse to go to China because one of the young people in the family is getting married. So they throw together this kind of really quick wedding as an excuse to go out to China and spend their last, their few final months with their grandmother. And it becomes this dance, in a way, from, particularly from Awkwafina's side, about whether or not she can maintain the secret. So wanting to tell her, and not just tell her about the diagnosis, but how do you suppress your own emotions and knowing that you may never see this person again if you end up leaving and going back to New York. This was certainly the most emotional experience I had at Sundance this year. I cried three times during the film. Awkwafina, who was, these other movies, she was demonstrating her comic sensibilities. We know she hosted Saturday Night Live last year. But this one, which is pretty strictly mostly a dramatic performance, she is terrific. Absolutely one of the best performances that I saw at the festival this year. It's a real breakout part for her, and it's kind of movie that people are going to, they especially if they see it in droves together, are really going to have kind of a communal emotional experience with this film, because this is really one that is about life, certainly more than death, and a movie that absolutely gets you by the very end of the film. Kind of has, that perfect kind of a finale to the film, and I could not recommend this film more highly. It was one of the pickups from A24 at the festival. They picked it up for $6 million, so I think you'll be seeing that. They haven't set a release date, but I'm guessing it's probably going to be sometime this summer.
Okay. Wow. All right. I'm a fan of Awkwafina's. I like her,
mm-hmm.
and it's not. So this is mostly a dramatic turn for her. Then,
Yeah, and most of the film is actually in Chinese as well. Oh, I would say it's about 75-80% in Chinese.
Okay, all right, and that's and you said A24 picked it up.
Yes.
All right, so we'll get to see that one. That's called The Farewell.
Yeah.
All right. Very cool. Was it? Was the response really strong for this all the way across the board?
Oh yeah. I mean, the film actually it premiered very early in the week. I ended up missing it. And everyone was kind of raving about it, and thankfully they scheduled a new screening of it on Wednesday, late afternoon. So I got a chance to check it out, and I was a mess afterwards.
Yeah,
a real mess.
All right. That's The Farewell. Eric, where do you want to go next?
Let's go to what I think had to be my biggest surprise of the festival.
Okay,
and it's a film called Brittany Runs a Marathon. And this film stars Jillian Bell, who some people might know from 22 Jump Street, The Night Before, Workaholics. She's a really funny comedic actor. She was also in Rough Night, the Scarlett Johansson movie, which just, I didn't think she was that good in particularly. But in this movie, she stars as a woman who, a New York woman who is approaching 30, still has kind of a party girl, you know, nightlife going for her, and when she goes to the doctor, she diagnoses her as quite overweight and suggests that she needs to lose some weight, otherwise it's going to cause significant health concerns sometime in the future. And, you know, it seems to be something that she is ready to dismiss right away, but surprisingly enough, this is a film that doesn't just go for the kind of easy jokes that you think in a film like this. You think that, you know, maybe for an hour and a half we're going to get Jillian Bell kind of doing shtick that she's, you know, we're familiar with her doing, and then in between a lot of fat jokes and a lot of jokes about her eating and, you know, not, you know, following the path that she's supposed to be following, and then making fun of the people who run this, this 26-mile marathon that she ultimately kind of sets as a goal for herself. And because the film doesn't follow that path, it becomes a really inspiring piece of work. Like I said, it's not just going down the easy route, and it's so wonderful when a film like this discovers that very early on, that it's not going to go down that path that seems like it's set up for. It's actually going to take the material with a modicum of seriousness while still being a comedy. She goes has relationships in the film, new friendships that she develops with people that she used to find annoying. And it becomes this just this really beautiful story. And Jillian Bell has, as breakouts go, this is a serious breakout role for her, and throughout the film, it's one of those films where you actually see her losing weight throughout the film. So she, as an actress, put in the work for this character. And I gotta say, I mean, not only is it really funny at times, but I was genuinely inspired by the end of this film. It's a true crowd pleaser. It's a breakout point for Jillian Bell, and Amazon seemed to agree with me because this film premiered late in the festival on Tuesday, and by Wednesday morning, Amazon had picked it up for $14 million.
Wow!
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
Amazon spent a lot.
Yeah. When I was reading some of the coverage about this, but it just seemed like Amazon was all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, they bought this. They set the record, and they set the record initially with Late Night, which was a film that we covered while I was at the festival. They paid $13 million for that. Then the next day, they paid $14 million for The Report with Adam Driver, which I still think is the best film I saw at the festival.
Yeah,
and then they paid another $14 million. So they spent $40 million on just these three films, and I wish them well. Particularly with The Report and Brittany, because I think those two are amongst the best films I saw this year.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Hang on, okay?
Yep.
All right. Eric Childress is with us, back from the Sundance Film Festival, giving us exclusive looks at some of the movies that we'll get a chance to see that he saw in Sundance. All right, we got to take a break here for the news, and then when we come back, we've got more with Eric and more from the Sundance Film Festival right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Monday morning. And it is Monday, which means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because that's what we do on Monday. Want to start your work week off with a laugh. So my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. We're going to talk about the we'll wrap up the Super Bowl talk and talk about the commercials this year and some of the other ones from previous years, too. And that's all coming up. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right. Eric Childress is hanging out with us. He gives us exclusive reviews of movies that he sees at film festivals during the whole year. And so Sundance just ended, and Eric is back with movie reviews from Sundance. Let's get Eric back in here. Hey, Eric.
Hello.
All right. Let's get back to it. Okay. Where do you want to go next?
Let's go to a film called Big Time Adolescence.
Okay.
And this is a starring vehicle for Davidson.
Oh.
And your enjoyment of the film is going to be specific to exactly how great a talent you think Pete Davidson is. Does he make you laugh on SNL, Nick?
Yes.
Yeah, then you will like this movie. It's kind of that simple. He plays a guy who is the high school boyfriend of the main character in the film. Who was a young boy, and his sister was dating Pete Davidson, and they just sort of became friends. He was sort of the cooler, older boy that he looked up to. He let him do things that, you know, normally, that people his age couldn't get to do. And as he grows older and he becomes a high school student himself, even though his sister and him have broken up, he has maintained a friendship with him. And to say that he's not exactly the best of influences on him is kind of an understatement. He's not necessarily a bad guy per se, but his life choices are not exactly great. He is kind of the very definition of a slacker, and is hanging out with this older boy is much to the chagrin of the kid's parents. His father, played actually very well by John Cryer, in the film. So the film, it seems like it could just be a one joke premise, but it's a bit more than that, and a lot of it is actually on the shoulders of Pete Davidson, who is really funny in this movie. Really funny. It's the same kind of shtick that you expect from him from Saturday Night Live, that same type of character. But if you're down with that, you're going to be down with this movie. I think that in the second half, it's trying to make a couple missteps, trying to plot up the movie a little bit more than it really is necessary. But not long after this film premiered at Sundance, you might have heard that he's actually teaming with Judd Apatow to do a kind of semi-autobiographical story about his life.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's slated for 2020. So this is sort of the warm up, I guess. For people who are fans of Pete Davidson, and even people who are not fans of Pete Davidson, I think they should take a chance on this movie, because there are a lot of people that have had relationships like this over the year, male relationships, and I think that they'll find some real personal stuff throughout. So it's a good film. I'm recommending it.
Oh, good, 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 good. I like Pete Davidson. I think he's funny, man. And
yeah.
All right, cool. All right, where do you want to go next?
Let's go to a film that I told you I was going to be seeing, and it's actually going to be coming out in theaters later this month, and that's Fighting With My Family.
Right.
Yeah, this is the wrestling story of Paige, who in the movie is played by Florence Pugh. Was kind of wondering why, amongst all the WWE divas out there, why her story a bigger deal than many of the other ones. And it's primarily because there was actually a documentary made about her family, a documentary that is referenced at the end of the film, but not actually seen happening throughout the film. Her family was a family of wrestlers, and they put on shows and stuff, and she got her chance to try out for the WWE. Vince Vaughn plays the coach the NXT coach in the film, who kind of guides her through this really tough part of the opportunity to go in the WWE. Dwayne Johnson appears in the film as himself in the two scenes that you see in the trailer, basically. And you know, Stephen Merchant wrote and directed the film, and I thought the film generally worked. I think for the most part, it's a kind of standard underdog type of tale, but is done so with a real care for its subject matter. And Florence Pugh she's the real deal. People who haven't seen Lady Macbeth, and I watched all 6 hours of that Little Drummer Girl miniseries that was on AMC. I'm all down for more Florence Pugh in roles, and her as our guide through this character. It ended up just kind of working on me eventually. I was kind of like right there on the fence the whole way, kind of seeing if this was gonna kind of go the cliche route or if it was gonna make the next leap. And by the end, I was generally involved and really involved with, even though you know that what's gonna happen is fixed in many ways. With the WWE, there's still a terrific payoff to the film, so I'm recommending it.
All right, I'm looking forward to that one anyway, because actually Paige is my favorite diva.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I love her, even though she can't wrestle anymore. She's
yeah, she hurt herself.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. That's Fighting With My Family, and that's coming out later this month. And okay, where do you want to go next?
Okay, well then let's talk about Honey Boy.
Honey Boy.
Are you familiar with Honey Boy?
I am not.
Okay. Well, this film stars and was written by Shia LaBeouf, who stars as his alcoholic father. His own father. Mm-hmm. And it's a semi-autobiographical tale about him growing up in the show business world with this noose around him. That's basically his father, that he was... in many ways, using him as a way to further his own career and sort of ride the coattails of his son's fame. The Shia has played different stages of his life, one in younger form by Noah Jupe from A Quiet Place and Wonder, and then later on by Lucas Hedges, taking on another really difficult, serious role about addiction. So Shia plays his father, and we see this relationship unfold. Shia didn't direct the film, but again, he did write it, and reportedly began working on this film the moment he got picked up from rehab, his last stint in rehab. It sounds like, it could be a vanity project. It sounds like something for him to work through his own pain, but might not be of great interest to us. But I gotta say, he does a really fine job in this film. And it's a reminder that, Shia can, keep himself under control with his own demons. He really can be a hell of an actor. And he's really terrific here, as are both Hedges and Jupe as the various incarnations of Shia himself. It's not a pleasant film. It is another really tough film about addiction in many different forms, but a really interesting one.
Okay, and that's called Honey Boy. Did that get picked up or?
Not yet. I don't believe that's been picked up just yet.
Okay, all right. Now, does it? It's semi autobiographical then, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Because I don't know if it's gonna. Cover the the HBO show that Affleck and
Project Greenlight.
Yeah, Project Greenlight.
Yeah,
he was. Is that mentioned in this movie?
I don't remember that being coming across in the film. There's some references to Transformers in the film, as well as in some of his childhood work, but I don't remember them really coming across the Project Greenlight stuff at all.
Okay, because that's the first time I remember seeing him.
Yeah,
was in that the
a lot of the film takes place in like hotel rooms and on set movie trailers and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right, that's Honey Boy. Okay, Eric, hang on. Okay.
Okay.
All right, Eric Childress is with us, and we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk more Sundance movies that Eric saw. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above downtown Chicago, and we're here until 5 a.m., my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning and it's a jokey time. And we're also going to wrap up the old Super Bowl with all the commercials and all that other cool stuff. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Welcoming back Eric Childress, who went to the Sundance Film Festival this year, saw 30 movies, and is giving us exclusive previews and reviews of those movies that we will see in the coming weeks and months. Let's welcome Eric back. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
All right, where do you want to go next?
Let's go to a film called The Death of Dick Long.
Okay.
And this was directed by one half of the Daniels, whose last film was a Sundance breakout film called Swiss Army Man.
Right.
And here, one of the Daniels is once again dealing with what to do with a corpse, basically. A bunch of kind of, you know, hillbillies, if you will, at the beginning of the movie are partying and shooting guns and drinking and stuff, and something happens to one of their friends. We're kind of kept in the dark as to exactly what happened to him. We see them kind of driving him to the hospital, kind of Reservoir Dogs style, and they just kind of leave him out front the emergency room and then just drive off and try to go on their days and try to forget what happened to him. Well, as the title suggests, he ends up dying at the hospital. And even though the town in which they live does not exactly have the greatest cops or doctors for that matter, it becomes this attempt at a comic farce as to how these two are going to get away with whatever their responsibility is to this guy's death without basically incriminating themselves along the way. It sounds like a funny premise. I was all kind of ready for it once the film started to kind of dig in a bit and weren't just revealing these characters as that they're funnier than their representative at the very beginning of the movie is kind of, you know, just kind of losers. But after about a half hour, this is sort of one of several films that I saw at the festival that were just kind of stuck in the first act. Like, it could never figure out what the next step was for these characters and how to amp up the energy in any way, shape, or form. Once this film kind of establishes its premise, it just kind of gets stuck there. And it gets to a point where everything that happens in, like, the last hour of the movie is just kind of spinning its wheels on everything that we already know from the first half or the first half hour of the film. And I ended up being really disappointed in this one. I thought, you know, all the stuff that, you know, Swiss Army Man, which I think is really great for about two-thirds, and I really dislike the ending of that movie. This is another film that I felt has a real kind of let this character's off the hook kind of ending that I thought was kind of insulting. So I guess they get a type. They deal with corpses and they have bad endings, in my opinion. But this one does not have any of that energy that Swiss Army Man had. It certainly doesn't have the Radcliffe performance going for it, nor any of the editing and the art direction and all that kind of stuff that really made that film really special and kind of stand out that year. This film really has none of that. It's just kind of stuck in, you know, exactly how much you're going to laugh at, you know, how dumb these characters are.
Okay. That's The Death of Dick Long. Did that get picked up, or?
Yeah, A24 actually has that.
Oh, A24's already got it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. Where do you want to go next?
Let's go to another film that I liked called To the Stars. And this was directed by the woman who directed a film some years ago at Sundance called Land Ho. And it's a story, it's a film in black and white. And it's a story of set in like the 1950s or 60s, in a small southern town where Kara Hayward from Moonrise Kingdom plays a kind of a mousy, shy girl, glasses, is picked on by some of the older boys in school. And then a new girl comes to town, played by Liana Liberato, and she's a lot more confident, a bit more in touch with everything about herself for the most part, and they develop a friendship and as ways to kind of get Hayward's character out of her shell. And there are a lot of secrets along the way, you know, why this her family, Liberato's family, has moved in back, moved into this town. There seems to be something in their past that they've tried to run away from. Tony Hale plays her very kind of conservative father in the film. And it's a film that is really trying to emulate films not just set in the 1950s, but films sort of the 1950s, movie of sort of Tennessee Williams type melodramas, including at one point it sort of gets to, you know, reaches a fever pitch that feels like something you could hear with a lot of really loud trumpets, you know, trumpets in the background from 1950s melodramas. But it's a good film. You know, it's beautifully shot, again, in black and white. The two performances are very good. It's a film that overplays its hand most of the ways. It kind of keeps its secrets very close to the vest. A really good story about females, you know, coming into their own and really kind of taking responsibility for, you know, who they are.
Okay. And that's called To the Stars.
Yeah.
Okay. To the Stars. And now, has that one been picked up?
That one has not been picked up. I was just looking that up, actually, and I have not seen anything to suggest that was picked up yet.
Okay. All right. But it's a good one.
Yes, it is.
All right. All right. Where do you want to go next?
Let's go to one of the horror films at the fest called Wounds. This is the new film from director Babak Anvari, who's had a hit a couple years ago at the Sundance Festival with a Iranian horror film called Under the Shadow. This is an American film starring Armie Hammer as a bartender who one night some college kids come into his bar and they leave behind their cell phone. So he takes it home and then kind of peeks at what's going on the cell phone as someone begins texting it, and discovers that the owner of the cell phone may be in some kind of mortal danger, particularly of a supernatural variety that is very unclear exactly what's going on. His girlfriend, who is played by Dakota Johnson, Zazie Beetz, is in the film as a patron of his bar that, even though she's in a relationship, he's very much on the make for. This is one of those films where your main character is kind of going into kind of descending into madness, trying to figure out exactly what's going on around him. There are certainly unexplained supernatural elements that begin messing with his day and, you know, his driving and, you know, all kinds of stuff. It appears to be, in a way, you know, at some point it's almost Videodrome-y in a way, in the way that it's sort of bringing body horror into the forefront, even though that's really kind of a minor part of the film. I think the film is more going for, or, you know, trying to go, as many films these days, and trying to sort of unmask the mysteries of toxic masculinity and what exactly, you know, stirs up within us and what we're trying, some of us are trying to suppress. But I am in 17 years now, I've been going to Sundance. I have never seen a reaction at a press screening the way I did to the ending of this movie.
Mm.
And I don't mean that in a positive way. Because the ending of this film, if you remember a couple years ago when you probably saw a movie called The Devil Within in theaters.
Yeah.
The way people reacted to that movie was what I heard at the Sundance Festival this year.
Wow.
With critics. There's some people that like this movie very much. This movie seems to build to a particular crescendo at the end, and it seemed like, okay, now we're getting into the thing. Oh, it's over.
Mm.
That's kind of what happens in this movie. It kind of teases you along for 80-some minutes, and then it gives you this moment where you're like, oh, here we go, and it's over.
Wow.
So I could not fully endorse this film.
Okay. All right. Now, I see that this one's got a release already. It's coming out March 29th.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. So
I didn't know if it had a release date yet.
Yeah. It's according to this, it's March 29th. It'll be out. I like the cast very much.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. Eric, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right. Eric Childress is with us. He's fresh from Sundance Film Festival. He saw 30 movies while he was at the Sundance Film Festival, and we're getting reviews of a bunch of them. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we're going to come back with more with Eric Childress right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and yeah, it is a Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, and because it's Monday and it's a jokey time. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Eric Childress, back from Sundance Film Festival, is giving us some reviews of some of the movies he saw. All right, let's do another one.
Okay. A film called Corporate Animals. And this film stars Demi Moore as the owner of a company that produces edible cutlery.
What?
And the company, which seems to not be doing particularly well, she nevertheless takes out her corporate staff on one of these team-building retreats and takes them into what is basically going to be spelunking. The spelunking team, or the guide, is played by Ed Helms. The cast includes Jessica Williams, Isaiah Whitlock Jr., amongst them, Nassim Pedrad, amongst others. It's a really good cast as this group ends up getting stuck in the cave, and it becomes a survival comedy. Some people at the festival are comparing it to The Descent, though I don't follow that because there are no monsters in it. This is more, you know, sort of a corporate comedy meets Alive, if you will. It's directed by Patrick Bryce, who did the films Creep, the Creep films with Mark Duplass, and a film called The Overnight with Adam Scott and Jason Schwartzman that I think is very funny. This one was really quite of a misfire, though it does have some funny gags in it. The cast, obviously, is very likable. Demi Moore, still not a great comedic actress. Mm-hmm. She's just not, this has never been there for me. And as the star of the film, we needed someone a bit stronger in that part, though the supporting cast kind of helps to fill in the blanks throughout the film. But there's just not enough. A movie that is going to truck in cannibalism as a running joke in the film, you think that would just kind of add to, you know, a greater absurdity. But it's just kind of treated a little too nonchalant for my taste and for their taste, I guess. And it never quite, like Death of Dick Long, it just kind of never makes, even though it goes there, it just kind of never gets beyond the level of comedy that starts with at the beginning. So that was a disappointment as well.
Okay. But it's a good cast. But, boy, Nassim Pedrad, man, I wish she would work more.
Yeah.
She's great. Okay, that's Corporate Animals with Demi Moore.
Yeah.
And let's go one more here, Eric.
Oh, one more. Jeez, which one should I go with here? We did all those. Let's do a movie called Sweetheart.
Sweetheart.
Another one of the horror movies played at the festival. And it stars Kiersey Clemons. As the movie opens, basically opens like Castaway. We find her passed out at the edge of the ocean on what appears to be a deserted island. She goes about doing her best Tom Hanks impression for about 20, 30 minutes in the film with just about no dialogue whatsoever. But, of course, she's not alone on the deserted island. And there's a monster out there that's comes in from the ocean. And the reveal of the monster, the first time we actually see the monster, is one of the great reveals of the festival. It's a really wonderful, striking moment. And for me, the film is kind of downhill from there. After, a couple bits where it's trying to maintain the, we're not going to do much of any dialogue here, and we're just going to, do the horror equivalent of The Haunting and do sound and, all that kind of stuff. Then a couple more survivors, friends of hers, end up floating onto the island on a raft. And at that point, that's the point where the film really kind of derails for me. The addition of the two characters, not great actors to begin with. Emery Cohen, who was so great, I think, in Brooklyn, with Saoirse Ronan, has really not been good in anything else I've seen him in, including this one. And it seems to be, there's like a subplot in this movie that is referenced many times, but never seems to come to fruition at any point throughout the movie. And that was like, you just sit there waiting, like, when are they going to confront this thing that's obviously happening on this island? And I don't know if that was part of the filmmaker's attempt to go just like, yeah, this is going on, but clearly not the most important thing, so we're not even going to address this, even though there are lots of big clues of things that are going on with these three characters. And then it just, devolves into, not devolves, but it just becomes a, straight-up survival story about, how is she going to defeat this monster? A monster that, for me, is not that far removed from the monster in Leviathan. So, that's not exactly a compliment either. So, yeah, I thought it was kind of poorly acted. It's only 82 minutes, so you're in and you're out, and I know people that really liked it, but it just didn't work for me.
Okay, and that's called Sweetheart.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Eric, let's go through the box office real quick before we get you out.
Sure.
Glass, for the third week in a row, is the number one movie. 9.5 million, bringing it to 88.6 million. But that's not as good as Split, correct?
No, not even close. I mean, Split ended up with 138 million. And while Glass is going to reach the $100 million mark, or should it with no problem, it should have a very significant drop next week with all the new movies that are opening.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think that The Upside, which is finishing second, it might just leapfrog it next week.
Yeah, The Upside. But that's turned out to be a big one right there. 75.5 million total.
Yeah, it's going to make a run at 100 million. It might just come up short, but it's been making very small drops week after week. And I think it is a shot even to outgrow Glass.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Miss Bala, $6.7 million. Nobody expected that to make a lot of money, right?
No. And, it's such a piddly number. I mean, it's a $15 million budgeted film, so it's not like some huge bomb.
Yeah.
But, $6.7 million on a $15 million budget is not exactly going to inspire confidence with the people behind it.
Aquaman, $4.7 million. Man, $323.5 million in America only.
$1.1 billion.
It's unbelievable. Really unbelievable. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, 4.4 million. Boy, that's really doing well. It's hanging in there.
Yeah. No, I mean that's clearly the evidence of word of mouth that it started off decent and it's just played through the holidays. It's now played through January. It's stuck in the top five for several weeks. It's a film that people who see it are talking about it. Why? Because it's good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah.
Aquaman, not so much.
All right. And then what do you think is going to be number one next week?
Oh, Lego Movie.
Of course.
Yeah, Lego Movie by a mile. It would surprise me if What Men Want has a pretty healthy second place finish. I've not heard great things about the movie so far. And this is kind of the standard Liam Neeson winter action film now.
Right,
although
right.
I hear that's very good.
Okay, I will say this: there is one line in the What Men Want trailer that actually made me laugh out loud.
Okay,
and that is this woman. She Taraji P. Henson goes. This woman gave me a cup of tea. And it was really weird after I drank it. And then her friend goes, "Wait a minute, you drank the tea?" And then she says, "Yeah." And he goes, "Well, I thought black people stopped drinking tea after Get Out." See, that's a funny line. That's a funny line.
No, I didn't even remember that from the trailer.
Yeah.
But like, you know, like What Women Want, you know, it's a terrible movie with Mel Gibson, but at least you can, the premise is, you know, it's kind of understandable, the mystery of women and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
What Men Want, not that much.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. All right, Eric, thanks a lot, man, and feel better, okay, man?
Yeah, thank you, man.
All right, I appreciate your all the Sundance reports and everything. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
All right, there you go. Eric Childress, everybody. Exclusive Sundance reports and all kinds of fun stuff. All right, we're going to take a break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5. Coming up, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, and then Steve Cochran coming up at 6 for your morning drive. Also, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. So, another Super Bowl in the books. And of course, we, you know, people who watch the Super Bowl, sometimes a lot of people watch it just for the commercials. And some people, you know, like enjoy the whole experience of the game and the commercials. It was a lackluster game, to say the least, this year. So it wasn't a very exciting game. So I think a lot of people were relying on entertainment coming from those commercials. And there were some good ones, I thought. Dan, were there any commercials that stood out for you?
You know, the T-Mobile series, I think kind of won the night. Obviously, they were one of the ones with the multiple entries, but each one of them I found funny. But the two ones that I liked the most was the girlfriend asking what the boyfriend wants for dinner tonight. And you saw like all seven of his responses, all of which things I have typed or thought when I've been asked by my wife what to have for dinner tonight. So I thought that one was really good. And then the one where the dad thinks texting is Google and he's asking for a lasagna recipe and his daughter finally just gives up and gives him one. I thought that was pretty good too.
Yeah. The one with the what do you want for dinner thing, that ends with just tacos. Right? Doesn't it end with the
You know what? Yes. Well, that's what he wanted.
Yeah.
And she wanted sushi.
Oh, and then it ends with sushi, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And one of his texts was like, "Why are you even asking me? You just want sushi."
Exactly. Yeah. That's pretty funny. Let's see. Well, we've got Steve. You know, our good friend Steve Johnson here from the Chicago Tribune. We haven't had Steve on in a long time on the show. We should get him back on the show at some point just to chat with him. Steve's a great guy, and he ranked the 2019 Super Bowl commercials. He does this every year. This is like his, you know, the regular rundown that Steve does. But I want to hear from you guys. What are the commercials that stood out for you? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Let's see. So here's he's got them all. There's a lot of them too. I mean, there's a lot of Super Bowl commercials. So Steve Johnson, our good friend Steve Johnson, has ranked these, and we want to hear from you guys. What were your favorites or least favorites, or you know that kind of stuff for the Super Bowl commercials? 312-981-7200. How about this? M&M's Bad Passengers. He gave this one an A-. The Mars hard-shelled candy brand has had a pretty good run with its ads featuring the spokesmercials. This one continues the tradition. Christina Applegate, driving an SUV from the mom position, attempts to quiet squabblers in the back seat. Finally, she's had enough and dramatically pulls over, turning around and announcing, if you don't stop, I will eat all of you alive right now. The kids, who are, of course, the humanoid M&Ms, freeze, and then one says, I prefer the break us apart option. It's a tight, well-executed take on familiar scenes of parental frustration and embarrassing overreaction. Demerits for offering nothing but an image of and a tagline about the new product supposedly being introduced, an M&M's candy bar, chocolate candy bar. Yeah, that was pretty funny. I mean, I like Christina Applegate. I think she's funny. And that was a pretty good commercial. That was pretty good. That one turned out pretty good. Hyundai, the elevator, got an A. This is the one where Jason Bateman was like the elevator operator. A young couple is going car shopping via elevator. Elevator operator Jason Bateman knows what that means. You're going to go down. Down past root canal, down past jury duty, even below the talk and the vegan dinner party. But when they arrive at car shopping, they announce that they're using Hyundai and a buyer protection program, and they get whisked up to the high floor. It's funny, from the Beatloaf to the Captain Colon in a hospital gown trying to sneak off up high, and it dramatizes the good the car maker says its shopper assurance program achieves. Did you know, Dan, that that commercial caused a stir?
Oh, really?
Among vegans, they were not happy.
Oh.
Vegans were not happy. It was like within minutes after it aired, people were on the internet going, what do you mean worse than a vegan dinner party? I thought it was funny.
I thought so, too.
I thought it was funny. And Jason Bateman rules. He's just he's so snarky, and he's like perfect for this, for the commercial. But yeah, I thought that was I thought it was pretty funny.
It was one of the
better ones. But the vegan Beatloaf. Oh man! All right, how about this one? Olay Killer Skin. Do you remember this one?
I did, because it was one of the first ones.
It was creepy, man.
It was creepy, and I couldn't tell it was Sarah Michelle Gellar at first.
Killer Skin. He gave it a B. Steve gave it a B. And by the way, if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We're talking Super Bowl ads from this year, and then we're going to go back some ways, too. But we're going to go down the line. I want to hear which Super Bowl commercials did you like from last night? While I wasn't paying attention to skincare products, this is to say at some moment during the last 30 years plus, they took the oil out of Oil of Olay. But that... That's not the point here. The point is that Sarah Michelle Gellar, in a horror movie scenario, can't call the cops on Home Intruder because her phone doesn't recognize her face to unlock itself because she's been using Olay. Props to the venerable face cream for being so tech-forward. But this is a more competent execution idea than an inspired one. Yeah, I actually thought the commercial was creepy. I thought the dude was creepy, the guy who busts into the house. I was like, this is pretty creepy, man. And I didn't recognize her right away either. I didn't. And it wasn't until when they were ducking behind the couch or something, they were on the floor, and I was like, is that Sarah Michelle Gellar? And it was. And I thought the picture of her was hilarious, too, that I used to look like this. I used to look like this. But yeah, I thought it was a pretty. I seriously was like, wow, this is pretty creepy. The guy with the mask and everything. I thought that was pretty creepy. So, how about this? Planters, Crunch Time. They gave this one a C. Big Peanut is in the game for the first time since 2008. You can tell because the two celebrities it's hired are about that vintage. Mr. Peanut drives the Nutmobile recklessly through city streets. Watching from a bench, Charlie Sheen says, "People think I'm nuts." Flattering himself with the notion that people think about him. Mr. Peanut is on his way to a sports watching event in a living room where he slides nuts down the table to bump chips away from the snacker, Alex Rodriguez. Those won't be the first pill-shaped things Rodriguez has ingested to boost his earning power. Tired, famous people, and a stock chase scene scenario are not a wired advertisement make. By the way, it's not just chips that he bumps out of the way, they're kale chips. I think that's an important distinction. Because he was about to eat kale chips, and Mr. Peanut saved him. Yeah, that wasn't much. That really wasn't much. Pringles, sad device, A-. The brand plays with the interesting concept of stacking, merging several flavors together to create something new. But where the ad really shines is in making fun of the always-on home assistance you see presently in other SB ads. The sad device of the title answers a question about the number of flavor combos that are possible, then laments its status. I'll never know the joy of tasting any, for I have no hands to stack with. it's as about to bemoan God's role in this. Its owner commands, play Funky Town. This is fun and breezy and on a snack message for Super Bowl watchers. But there are whispers of sharp social commentary in there, too. Yeah, that was a pretty good one, too. Yeah, these weren't bad. This batch was pretty good this year. Now we're going through it. What do you guys think? 312-981-7200 for your Super Bowl ads. Which ones did you like? Which ones? And by the way, did you see the trailer for the... because they debuted a few trailers, okay? Obviously, the Avengers was probably the one that got the most heat. And it was actually really cool. The teaser trailer was really cool for the Avengers movie. But did you see the trailer for the Rock and Jason Statham?
Statham? Did, yes.
That looks completely ridiculous. And I kind of can't wait to see it. So, all right. Let's take a quick break. News is coming up in the afternoon. We'll dive right back into the Super Bowl commercials. What did you guys think? 312-981-7200. All right. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Last night was the Super Bowl. Not a very exciting game. And now we're going through the commercials because, you know, that's one of the reasons why everybody watches the Super Bowl, so that they can see the cool commercials. And there were some good ones last night. So we're jumping in talking about the commercials from last night's game. And we would love to hear from you. Which ones stood out for you? Which ones were great? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right. Steve Johnson puts together his annual list of all the commercials, and he ranks them. That's what we're looking at here. So the next one here is Skechers Easy Life, which he gave a B+. I like to make my life easy, says play predicting savant NFL announcer and retired QB Tony Romo. So he has a robot vacuum. He has a tennis ball machine to play fetch with his dog. The golf hole he putts towards is the size of a kiddie's swimming pool. And the shoes he wears, Skechers slip-ons, don't even require lacing. Some people call this surrender. But an accompaniment to sweatpants all the time and midnight Ben and Jerry's. But Romo and the shoe brand pitch it as cleverness. I don't remember that one. Did you see that one, Dan?
Yeah, it was, I want to say, late second quarter. It was pretty nondescript.
Okay. Yeah, I don't remember that one. I guess I wasn't paying attention. Colgate Total Close Talker. With a B+, fans of the 90s will appreciate the homage to a Seinfeld concept, the person who stands way too near you in a conversation. It makes sense as a way to sell mouth care products, and actor Luke Wilson is, of course, nimble in the title role. The one problem in the series of dryly amusing workplace scenarios, unlike Wilson, who uses Total to manage his quirk, real close talkers don't know that they're close talkers. They just get up in your face, fresh, minty fresh or not. You know which Seinfeld was on last night before he came down to work was the puffy shirt, and that of course features the low talker, not the close talker, the low talker. I don't want to be a pirate. That. How about Amazon? Not everything makes the cut. Got a C+. Alexa, get a new ad agency. The concept here is okay. Amazon's not at all creepy, always-on digital assistant is going into a lot of devices these days, but not every idea works. It's the dramatization of the reject pile that falls flat. Forrest Whitaker does some business with an Alexa-enabled toothbrush. Harrison Ford is forced to play against a dog wearing an Alexa collar that understands dog language. And then there's the muddled scenario where a city's lights blink on and off, apparently due to overheard concert lyrics. In one of the first lights out shots on the Chicago River cityscape. So we were good enough to illustrate urban beauty, Amazon, but not to host the HQ2. add this long and costly spot of lists that Alexa fails. I thought it was funny.
I thought so, too.
Yeah, I thought it was good. Steve didn't like that one. Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny. Harrison Ford's funny in it. So, is it, and that's like the first commercial Harrison Ford's ever done, right?
That's a good question.
I don't think he's ever done a commercial before. Yeah, I'm not sure. Bubbly, can I have a buble? Gets an A-. Whenever I've seen this newish sparkling water on store shelves, I've thought of the contemporary crooner Michael Bublé. Ditto, it turns out, for the company's ad agency. They enlisted Bublé in a convenience store scene that finds him desperately insisting customers should pronounce the product like his last name, Bublé. It's fairly basic, but there's not a wasted moment in the telling. And from the girl asking, can I have your autographs, Mr. Bubbly? At the ending of the singer writing his name on all the cans with a Sharpie. Bonus, now I know from reading this ad that Bubbly is a Pepsi product. Okay. Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny too, because I saw this commercial. They leaked this one before the game, where he's writing his name on the on the cans. I've never seen that product before. I've never. Bubbly, have you ever?
Not before today.
No. This isn't the first time that they're having fun with the last name here. Because when John Hamm hosted SNL a few years ago, and Michael Bublé was the musical guest, they did a sketch where John Hamm opened up a restaurant and had Michael Bublé basically participating against his will. And it was Ham and Bubbly. That was the name of the restaurant, Ham and Bubbly, where all they served was ham and champagne. That was the entire thing, even though his last name is pronounced Bublé. But John Hamm, very well, obviously we all know that John Hamm is very funny. But that's not the first time that they've played with his last name like that. Microsoft, we all win with a B+. There's nothing not to like in this heart-tugging look at differently abled boys and girls fitting in with their peers via video games and fitting into video games via the adaptive controller for the MS Xbox, which looks to rely on circular pads more than levers and buttons. I love video games, my friends, my family, and again, video games, says one of the kids, and it fits right in. Yeah, that was a good commercial. That was a good one. Bumble, the ball is in her court, B+. This app ad employs Serena Williams to deliver its message of female empowerment. Solid choice there. And the ad is smartly constructed, equating Williams' choice to take up a tennis racket with the general idea of women making the first move in work, in love, and in life. It's a good sign for the spot that I knew only generally what Bumble was before seeing it, but I was able to suss out that it's a dating app where women make the first move. Yeah, I thought that was a pretty inspirational one, too. And again, you know, this is another case where I'm not familiar with the product. I wasn't familiar with the product at all. How about this one? WeatherTech with pet comfort products. They gave it a B-. The floor mat maker in suburban Chicago Bolingbrook has become a Super Bowl regular, delivering a series of unapologetically basic ads that push its message of made in America car floor protection. This year, it got new products. It's got new products to tout, the pet comfort line of feeding bowls, and it gets a little crazy in the advertising. There's a willful dog pushing an elevator button to go check on the new bowls, touted as non-toxic. I'm not sure there's a huge market of people who think their current dog bowls are poisonous, and I know I had to use another advertiser, Google, to find out what certified by the NSF means. That's the National Sanitation Foundation. But yeah, it's another WeatherTech effort giving the cold shoulder to notions of fancy advertising. The outfit wants to move product. That's it. Yeah, I wasn't aware. Dan, was that has that been an issue with the unhealthy dog bowls?
You know, it struck me as one of those things where, like, you haven't heard about it, but, like, when you know how people can be so obsessed with their pets that it kind of becomes one of those things where, like, is my food bowl safe?
Yeah.
And then I know WeatherTech endears a lot of loyalty, so it's kind of like, well, you know, those are good guys, and they're in Bolingbrook, and they're made in America, and things like that.
Yeah.
So maybe my dog bowl isn't safe. Maybe I will try it.
Yeah, it was a little. The commercial was a little strange. I thought. I wasn't aware that they were that. You know, I mean, I will say this: I did learn that they do have products like that. I wasn't. I just thought they made the stuff for the cars. You know, for the floor of the car and everything. They do a real good job branding that and. You know, but I had no idea that they were doing pet products. So I did learn something from the commercial. I will say that if the idea was to, you know, to show you that they do more than just those mats and stuff. Mercedes-Benz, say the word. He gave it a B+, a rock solid effort from the German car maker, which wants buyers of its new budget A-Class line to know that the vehicles contain an Alexa-like personal assistant that can change dashboard light colors, start music, etc. So a bearded dude from the target market walks around ordering things the way he wants them. Find the lost cat, tear up the parking ticket, make the putt, Ricky Fowler. When he says, change the music, the opera singer turns into ludicrous rapping. Lassie, Wile E. Coyote, and the Free Willy Killer Whale also make appearances. There's a lot going on, like in 60-second auto ads of previous years, but here it all funnels it straight into the tagline, if only everything in life listened to you like your new A-Class. I thought that was a good commercial, too. I thought it was clever. I did. Okay, now this was a bad commercial, I thought. The avocados from Mexico. The top dog, where people or dogs are watching people like they're in the dog show. The fruit, or maybe it's a vegetable consortium, has been a reliable source of Super Bowl ads. Then making them amusing and pushing guacamole. Here, though, the filmmaking doesn't quite work. You can figure out it's a dog show setting where the humans are the ones being judged, and there's a chuckle or two once you've solved that puzzle, but. Getting there is more work than finding a not-too-ripe avocado at the supermarket, and Kristen Chenoweth is wasted as a judge. Certainly no Fred Willer. It's a Best in Show reference. It's enough to make you dip in salsa instead. Yeah, I thought it was pretty bad. I thought that commercial was pretty bad. And I didn't even quite get it. I was like, I don't know what the connection... I didn't even know what the connection was to the product. Yeah. That was one of the weakest commercials of the night. There's no question. All right. All right, you guys want to jump in here? It's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And we're talking about the Super Bowl commercials and all that fun stuff. Steve Johnson from the Chicago Tribune has graded them all, and we're going through them, and we want to hear from you. Good, bad, funny, memorable. What were your favorite commercials? 312-981-7200. We'll get right back to it after we break. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday, and it's a jokey time. We're talking about the Super Bowl commercials from last night. Which ones did you guys like? What were your favorites? 312-981-7200. Steve Johnson from the Chicago Tribune every year puts together a list of all of the commercials and then grades them. And that's what we're checking out, our good friend Steve Johnson, grading all of the commercials. And we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. We got some texts coming in. Let's see. Brian and Johnny said, we thought the Alexa commercial with Harrison Ford and his dog was the funniest. Yeah, I can't believe Steve gave that a negative review. 815 area code says, please mention the Washington Post commercial. It was the most meaningful. What was the Washington Post commercial, Dan? Remind me.
Tom Hanks narrates the ad about focusing on the journalists that were killed in action covering various wars and situations around the globe.
I think I missed that one.
It was at, I want to say it was the first or second commercial after the two-minute warning at the end of the game.
Oh, okay. Okay. 312 area code says, the Cardi B Pepsi commercial was my favorite. Well, it's not just Cardi B. Steve Carell was in that, right? In that commercial? Yeah, and wasn't there, was there another celebrity in that, or am I nuts?
Little John.
Oh, that's right. Oh, man. All right, how about this? Toyota Tony gets a B- from Steve. Another entrant in the Sincerity Bowl. This one touts the achievements of female football player Antoinette Harris, the first non-kicker to be offered a college scholarship. It sends a solid message of refusing to accept limitations, and I'm happy she's earning a paycheck for her achievement. But the pivot to the commercial is always the tricky part in these heartwarming ads. As Stephen Colbert pointed out in his brilliant game week parody of feel-good Super Bowl ads, Toyota undercuts the good feeling it's built up at the end, pointing out that the new RAV4 is also shatter perceptions. So RAV4 is a feminist SUV? Doritos, now it's hot. Oh, this was great. This is a great one. A minus. Chance the Rapper rhyming with about the flaming hot nacho cheese Doritos might cost him a little street cred. Excitement over a new chip flavor isn't entirely in sync with his social justice message. Ditto for his teaming up with to dance in an airplane hangar with 1990s heroes Backstreet Boys to their hit I Want It That Way. But a steady through line in hip-hop has been collaboration. And this team up between a corn chip mega brand, the boy band, and the contemporary Chicago rapper positioned a little tongue-in-cheek as Chance's fantasy about what's hot is done with high spirits and a winning light touch. It's star power, feet, flavor, and fun. I thought it was great. I thought it was great. I loved seeing Chance up there with the Backstreet Boys. Yeah, I thought it was a very entertaining commercial. And it was one of those commercials that, I mean, so the product, obviously, you know, the product is advertised on the Super Bowl every year. You know what I mean? Doritos is a constant. And people are probably eating those things at the time that the commercial comes on. But I like this Renaissance period for Backstreet Boys. I'm enjoying this. They're like third stage of a career, and I thought teaming up Chance the Rapper with them was great. I thought it was really entertaining. Expensify this B-. 2 Chainz is making a music video complete with tricked out car and a seafood tower on the hood. Record company finance guy Adam Scott knocks on his window mid shoot, says he needs paper receipts for all of it if you want to get reimbursed. But no, the rapper replies, he's got the Expensify expense reporting app. Nothing exciting here, but it gets the message across. Also, I would like my company's finance department to watch, because our current expense system, instead of being workable from a cell phone in the front of your sports car, is the kind of software that takes days to psych yourself up even to open up on a desktop. Yeah, that one didn't stand out. That one didn't stand out too strongly. Pepsi, more than okay. This is one we just mentioned. One of the listeners just mentioned this. He got an A-. This one gets points for wise celebrity use, and especially for looking arch rival Coke's advantage over Pepsi straight in the eyes, like number 2 Avis used to do with number 1 Hertz. It's a riff on people habitually ordering Cokes in restaurants, and waiters habitually responding, is Pepsi okay? Steve Carell overhears this and goes into a sort of not mock orange outrage mode. Okay, he asks, are puppies okay? Is a shooting star okay? Rapper Lil Jon at the counter delivers an okay catchphrase. Cardi B saunters in dramatically and grabs a Pepsi can and Carell fails to try at his own okay. Yeah, that's a funny commercial. It's a good combination of celebrities, too. So, Stella Artois. Oh, I hated this one. And Jeff Bridges is in it, too. Change up the usual, C+. When actors turn their iconic roles into product hawkers, it's almost never a good look. Movie and TV fans don't deserve to see favorite characters sold out. That said, there's cleverness in bringing Sarah Jessica Parker and Jeff Bridges, who both played roles identified with specific drink orders, and having them order Stella's to get the try something new idea. But Parker / Carrie Bradshaw is skewing a cosmopolitan as Sex and the City theme notes play, and Bridges, the dude turning down a white Russian, is highly on the nose. And when Bridges, at least in the 45-second cut of the ad I watched, says the dude abides, it crosses over into cringeworthy. The Big Lebowski has so many things over the years. A marketing opportunity for a middling Euro beer should not be one of them. And on a side note, why does she get a draft and he a bottle? Yeah. I mean, look, you know, he's Jeff Bridges. I love the guy. Not a big fan of Sarah Jessica Parker, but the idea is good because she's a Cosmo and he's a white Russian guy. But I agree with the whole the dude abides thing at the end. I was like, no, man. You know, and I don't usually complain. Any excuse for me to see Jeff Bridges is good. So it was, I was just happy to see him in the commercial, but I just think the commercial... pretty much failed.
My favorite part of the commercial was the Dos Equis guy they brought in.
Oh, they did. Yeah, they had the Dos Equis
guy.
Yeah, they brought in the Dos Equis guy. That's right. Wonder how they got away with that. He's not the Dos Equis guy anymore.
No, he's not. He's not under contract anymore.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was pretty cool. All right. What do you guys think? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And it's with beer probably still the number one product that they buy time for.
Yeah, I would say beer.
Cars too. Yeah, that's always the way it is, right?
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
all right. Let's take a quick break here. We got the news coming up, and if you guys want to jump in, we're talking last night's Super Bowl commercials. 312-981-7200. We're also going to jump into Super Bowl commercials from the past as well. All right, we got the news coming up after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And yeah, and yesterday was the Super Bowl. And you remember, Dan, last year when... I decided to go to bed right at the beginning of the second half.
2 years ago.
Oh, 2 years ago, yeah, right. Yeah, because it was the Patriots. Yeah, that was 2 years ago. The biggest comeback was the biggest comeback in Super Bowl history.
Right.
Yeah, and I went to bed. I was like, yeah, that's over. Yeah, last year Philadelphia won. Yeah.
Right.
Because I remember the... I remember last year, didn't they grease up all the street lights and stuff? And,
right, so people couldn't climb them.
Because Philadelphia, they're all insane in Philadelphia. And actually, it wasn't that bad, right? I mean, was it bad? The celebration
in New England?
Yeah,
I haven't heard anything.
No. Last year in Philadelphia.
Oh, I heard it got pretty crazy.
Oh, well, yeah, that's right, because they were on top of, like, an awning, and the awning busted down right. And everything. But at least they didn't have to climb streetlights. They couldn't climb streetlights because they were all greased. I always thought that was funny. I just think that's amazing, that they actually had to do that. Philadelphia, man. Yeah, you know, I would think the celebration in New England is just like, whatever, we won again.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, that was nice. That was pretty fun. How many championships do our sports teams have now? I don't remember if this town went nuts in 80. I'm trying to remember in 86, the beginning of 86, if they were cars being flipped and stuff. I know when the Bulls won in 91, the place went nuts. The city went nuts and started flipping cars and stuff. Yeah. But that's the Super Bowl, man. All right, we're talking about the commercials. If you would like to join us, it's 312-981-7200 for your favorite Super Bowl commercials that aired last night. There were some really good ones and some, yeah, and some memorable ones and some not so memorable ones. But how about this? Michelob Ultra Pure Gold, the pure experience, gets a B-plus from our friend Steve Johnson, who was grading the commercials. Let's see. Autonomous sensory meridian response is a big concept for a light beer to embrace. It's a sort of bodily tingling that's thought to be caused by certain stimuli, one of which is whispering. So Zoe Kravitz here soft talks her way through the whole ad, first in the right speaker, then in the left, with a message about beer being pure and organic. Surprisingly, it works. The message is ordinary, but the method of delivery kept me on the edge of my couch cushion. Don't remember that one either. Did that air late in the game, Dan?
It did air later in the game, yeah. It was strange.
Okay. And then another Michelob Ultra ad, robots. That got a B. Lots of robots this year. Have we noticed that?
Yeah, and that seems to be a running commentary, like from my mom to like people on Facebook. It's like every other commercial had a robot.
Yeah, and like what was it Intuit that had the creepy robot? Like the robot baby or something?
TurboTax.
Okay, yeah, because I know that was another theme. It was a lot of tax. There was a lot, because I mean, obviously, you know, we're getting to tax season. But yeah, that was a creepy little robot there. And there's robots all over the place in these commercials. Along with craft beer, the super light Michelob Ultra has been the great growth story in beer in recent years. The appeal is right there on the bottle. 2.6 carbs, 95 cals. And it's a young, athletic crowd that seems to be drinking it. So it's a bold step for this brew to characterize as robots, people who work out obsessively. The last shot is the ad's madly exercising robot peering through a window at people in a bar digging their post-workout Mick Ultras. "It's only worth it if you can enjoy it," is the tagline, and what seems to be a very deft ad. You don't think too hard about the logic, because to most of the beer drinking world, Michelob Ultra is in itself a form of self denial. All right, Bon and Viv Spiked Seltzer. Oh, this was this one was weird, right? With the two underwater ladies, right? Was it in my nuts?
Right, right, and the first dad out of the gate.
It was a weird one, man. They give this the pitch. He gave it a B. Steve gave it a B. Bonnie and Vivian, the putative makers of this low-cal cocktail product from Anheuser-Busch InBev, plays mermaids explaining underwater that alcohol and fruit-flavored sparkling water with no sugar grams sounds too good to be true, but the myth is quote-unquote real. Suddenly they turn to nearby predators in this standard commercial pitch and revealed as a Shark Tank homage. "I'm in," says one great white. "I'll double down. It's a bit wacky and a large bit effective." Yeah, I thought it was creepy. I thought it was just weird. And I don't even know I've never even heard of that product, too. That's another product that I was like, what's that? So it's booze. It's just booze with like sparkling water with some booze in it.
Yep.
Jeez. All right. Here's Budweiser. "Wind Never Felt Better." A B minus. "A Dalmatian, Clydesdales, Amber Waves of Grain, Bob Dylan singing about blowing wind." Budweiser trots out all the icons as the horse and dogs are revealed to be traveling through a wind farm. It's meant to underscore the giant beer's commitment to sustainable energy, but the message is about as clear as a hazy IPA, a type of beer Bud decidedly is not. "Now brewed with wind power," says the large type in the ad. "Renewable electricity from wind power is one type of energy we use to brew. says the small, but you can read it if you freeze the screen. Yeah, they did bust out the greatest hits on that one. How about this? Audi Cashew with a C+. Ads that rely on shock humor need to actually be funny and also to make sense. This one falls short on both duties. The dreamy sequence we see involving a guy's grandpa taking a cover of a sleek Audi electric vehicle to present it to him is actually a surprise. His pre-death thoughts as he chokes on a cashew. Oh, yeah, this was a bad commercial. But why would grandpa have an e-car? Why is almost dying in the mundane way funny? You could argue that between lines, Audi is saying, buy this cool car before it's too late to enjoy anything. But I got to believe that there are better ways to say that without a relative fantasy of a nut blocking your windpipe. Also, a fellow working in that particular cubicle farm from the small town time looks of it would probably be stretching to get leather in his Camry, never mind buying a new Audi. Heck, I'm surprised he was snacking on cashews. Yeah, I didn't get that at all. I didn't get that commercial at all. I just thought it was weird. And, you know, the whole choking, seeing your own death, I just... that was a misstep on Audi's part. Let's see, here is Chris in Midway on WGNI. Chris?
Hey, Nick, how are you?
All right.
Yeah, the Audi commercial was really strange.
Yes, it was.
But the NFL commercial with... all the old guys reaching for the cake, and that was outstanding. That was probably the best commercial.
Yeah, the NFL, 100 years of NFL, was a very strong commercial. And the guys, you know, obviously you got some very recognizable and very funny guys in that commercial too. And that was a really good one. That was one of the best ones of the night.
Yeah, because you got some commercials where, like you said, you're thinking, like, what are you trying to sell and what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah, that happens.
The BMW one was strange.
That happens every year. Sometimes you just, you get a commercial, the commercial ends, and you're just kind of scratching your head going, what? What was that? What was
it's
that?
Like, what are you selling me? What do you want me to see or whatever?
Yeah.
But the NFL one was really cool with all the old guys. And
agree.
That was a great show, Nick.
All right, Chris. Thanks, buddy. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you want to jump in here with your thoughts on the Super Bowl commercials from last night, what were your favorite ones? Which were the most memorable? And, yeah, our good friend Steve Johnson has, as he does every year, has ranked and rated each commercial from last night. And we're going through his grades and his thoughts on it. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200 for Talk and Text. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here until 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Yeah, it's a Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in. He's going to tell a joke, as he does every Monday morning. And last night was the Super Bowl. So we're talking about that. And if you guys want to jump in with your thoughts on it. And the commercials is what we're really jumping in here, talking about the commercials. And coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Okay. Now, Steve Johnson, our good friend over here at the Chicago Tribune, has ranked and rated all of the Super Bowl commercials from last night. And we're going through them, and I want to know what you guys think. 312-981-7200. Let's see. What's next here? Sprint, best of both worlds, gets a B-. The wireless carrier wants people to know it offers the best of both worlds, meaning price and performance. So spokes guy sitting around with robots for some reason asks their advice. Bring in two-sport legend Bo Jackson is the first thought, and then the robot keeps going with wishes, and Jackson is stuck holding a mermaid, holding a keytar as flying horses hover. And Bo sensibly suggests just telling folks how much they can save. This is the best robot apology I've ever been in, Jackson says. It is that, I suppose, if you figure they are stand-ins for putting advertising types on the spot. This one's a little scattered shot, but at least it's lively and does not overstay its welcome. And again, robots. That's the theme. That was the theme for the commercials this year. You remember, Dan, that one year where it was the most tasteless commercials ever? Like, everything was farting and everything. You know what I mean? It was just like...
Yeah.
And that was the common theme that year. And I just remember watching the commercials going, man, what... And they weren't, I mean, it's fine if you want to do some, you know, you want to do that kind of humor, that's fine. I don't mind that kind of humor. I like it. But it's got to be funny. And none of it was funny. And a lot of it was really tasteless. I just remember there were complaints. People were complaining about it. So this year, though, your connecting theme is robots.
And mermaids, apparently.
And mermaids. Yeah. Robots and mermaids. I don't know. All right. Some text just came in. John says the Bud Light Game of Thrones new season commercial was really great. I agree with that. That was that. You know, when I was like, what's going on? You know, when the Game of Thrones theme started to play, and then the dragon comes in, I was like, what is happening here? Because it was so clearly a Bud Light commercial for the first part, but then it gets really violent. You know, like it's suddenly like what. Did they just kill the Bud Light Knight? Did they actually kill the guy? And then when the Game of Thrones thing comes up, I didn't see that coming. I got to say, that was a very surprising and clever commercial, combining those two things. That was a really good one. I agree with that. That was a really good one. 815 area code says, the WeatherTech Food Bowl are not just for safety. They're for dogs that are unhealthy and can't bend. Oh, I see. So they're easier for the dog to the dogs easier for them to use. 224 area code says the funniest commentary on the boring game was by Mercedes. The Twitter account for Mercedes-Benz USA said, if this game weren't in my stadium, I would have driven away by now. Benz later deleted the post. That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. 319 area code says, I love the Microsoft controller for disabled children ad. Yeah, we talked about that one. It's very sweet. I loved it. By the way, Gladys Knight was amazing. A class act. She was great. Gladys Knight was great. She still got it, man. She can sing. Yeah, she was great. Not so much with Shirtless Man, Tattoo Boy. Have you seen some of these posts that are going up on social media, on Facebook and Twitter and stuff, where there's a picture of shirtless, you know, Adam Levine, and he's all buff and in shape and everything, and he's got that tattoo that just says California across his mid. So have you seen, like, fat guys posting pictures shirtless next to him with the word Illinois written on their stomach?
No, I hadn't seen
it's
that.
It's really funny. It's really, really funny. I've seen at least two different ones of this. It's like just fat dudes with a beer, holding a beer with the word Illinois written on their flabby stomach, posting it next to Adam Levine. You remember what's the halftime best halftime show ever? 2007. I got to go with Prince. I mean, that was one of the best halftime shows of all time. I like Madonna, too, but yeah. I think Prince is just... I remember watching that going, I don't think I've ever seen a better halftime show. Not just because I love Prince, but he was great. I just... Maroon 5, though, man. I mean... I don't get it. Didn't you say that there were a lot of artists who were not going to, who didn't want to play because of political reasons?
Yeah, because of the Colin Kaepernick situation, yeah. A lot of artists that would have collaborated with him, with them, or, you know, were offered roles, turned him down for that reason.
Yeah. That's why you're stuck with Adam Levine. All right, let's look at a few more of these commercials here. Steve Johnson is doing a commentary here out of the Chicago Tribune. Devour food porn gets a C. These Devour commercials are weird anyway. the Kraft Heinz frozen food brand earned some publicity for reportedly not being allowed to talk about food porn in their ad. The spot subtracts that word and goes ahead with the innuendo-heavy concept, which proposes a woman's boyfriend has become a three-minute man addicted to either the brand's microwave mac and cheese or to food video generally. The story is unclear, so when she says she tried to spice up things and, quote, now you're addicted to amateur food video, it elicits confusion more than a chuckle over the nimble double entendre. The good news is that there's still an opportunity for some ad agency to pull off the challenging combination of sex with microwave meals. Yeah, those Devour ads in general are a little weird and a little vulgar. Just in general, not just the Super Bowl commercial from last night. Wix.com. Karlie Kloss ad gets a C. Karlie Kloss, I am told, is the supermodel known for coding. She's also the new co-host of Project Runway and the new sister-in-law of White House advisor Jared Kushner. All of these things are very interesting. This ad for the Build Your Own Website service, made in-house and not looking at it, is not. Kloss sits at a desk and tells viewers some basics about how Wix works. Also, we learn she loves it. It's so pro forma that you wonder, why bother putting it on in the Super Bowl, where ads reportedly cost more than $5 million for 30 seconds? Maybe the company figures generic will cut through the clutter of its own not-so-special way. Yeah, that wasn't very memorable. That wasn't a very memorable ad, and I have no idea who she is. Who she is. I don't know. Norwegian Cruise Line, good to be free, got to see another generic spot that makes you ask why. But it's got one important revelation. They have bumper cars on cruise ships now. they have bumper cars on cruise ships now. I don't know exactly what to do with this information, except perhaps to pine for the good old days when you played shuffleboard with your parents and you liked it. Oh, no. He gave this a B. He gave the chunky style milk a B. That was disgusting. That made me gag almost. Simple but on point. The upstart telecom touts $20 per month wireless by saying your current cellular bill isn't right. Like chunky style milk. The out of left gross out comparison works because the family morning breakfast scenario featuring the lumpy liquid plays it perfectly deadpan. Generic commercial mom says she likes it because it has the wholesome chunks my growing kids need, unlike smooth-style milk. I thought it was disgusting.
I thought of you and how disgusted you would be with it.
Because you know how I like my milk. Yeah, no, I was like, nah, you can't, don't be, ugh. And I'll tell you what, as soon as that thing aired, Facebook went nuts. People were like, chunky-style milk? That was not popular among the viewers, or at least the people on my news feed. Chunky style milk.
Was it Ernie? Engineer Ernie hated it too.
Oh, disgusting. Yeah. Disgusting. Oh my
Especially
God.
Especially when the girl tried to like tap it out of
yeah,
the glass.
Yeah, tap it out of the glass and it was revolting. Revolting. I don't know, was Steve Johnson in a good mood giving that a B? Wow. All right. We all hated it. Made me sick. All right. Chunky style milk. Okay, let's take a break, and we got the news coming up and then more Super Bowl ads. We want to hear from you. Phone lines are open. Text lines are open. 312-981-7200. News after this. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. And we've been talking about the Super Bowl and the Super Bowl ads specifically. If you liked any of the commercials and you want to jump in here, which ones are the funniest or the most memorable, 312-981-7200 So as far as trailers go, Dan, just what is it that movie even called? The Fast and the Furious. It's the two guys' last names,
yeah,
right?
Hobbs and something.
Hobbs and Johnson. Hobbs and Hobbs. You'd think I'd know because I love those movies. I just didn't.
Hobbs and Shaw.
Hobbs and Shaw with Jason Statham and Dwayne Johnson. A little spinoff from the Fast and Furious, and it looks ridiculous. It looks completely ridiculous. And then the other big one, obviously, was the Avengers, and they debuted a new Captain Marvel commercial. Which, is it just me, or does that movie look weird?
It does look weird, yes.
What's the character like, Dan?
That is a good question. It is, she has alien origins, is, you know, very powerful, and honestly, I don't know what they're doing with the character in the movie is different from the character in the comic book, so who knows at this point,
yeah.
But obviously she's going to be quite important in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. And I like Brie Larson, though, man. That's the thing. You know? And it's all going to connect to the Avengers because at the end of the last Avengers movie, that was the Nick, what's his name? Nick Fury?
Nick Fury, yeah.
It's played by Samuel Jackson. That's who he's contacting.
Right
before he completely turns into dust. And there was, I'm telling you, man, I didn't know that movie was going to end like that. You know what I mean? I mean, you did.
I did, but I didn't see it until it was, you know, available on VOD. So.
Yeah. I'll tell you, man, it's that last 15 minutes of that movie is devastating, man, especially the Spider-Man thing. I was like, what the hell, man? What are you doing? But yeah, so the Captain Marvel... people are going to, that comes out in March. So it's got to come. I mean, obviously it predates Avengers because it's got you have to set that character up so that you're familiar with her when she enters Endgame or whatever. It's called Endgame, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
So. All right. So those are just some of the trailers that were out there. And you know, and CBS enjoys advertising their own shows. I can tell you that. This is kind of nice. I'm going to go home on a Monday morning and have a Colbert to watch.
Oh, yes,
because Colbert was on after the to get a special Sunday night, and I saw a little clip from it. Gritty is on Colbert. Not sure what the connection is. You know. He's not a football mascot. He's a hockey mascot from Philadelphia. It's none of the teams that were playing. I don't know what the connection. I have no idea. But any excuse to have Gritty on is pretty good. So, all right. Well, we were just talking about Chunky Style Milk, which was disgusting. That commercial was disgusting. But Steve Johnson, our good friend, gave us a pass. He gave it a B. How about Turkish Airlines, The Journey? I guess the message you're supposed to take away is that Turkey is beautiful, exotic, and a little disorienting. Film star Sylvia Hoeks is luminous in The Line. A film by Ridley Scott intrigues. But all this for a 30-second teaser for a 6-minute Scott film about Turkey you're invited to go see online. On the one hand, I wanted to check it out. On the other, a Super Bowl ad should be able to function on its own. Yeah, I didn't understand that. I guess I didn't even realize that it was an ad for a film that you could watch online. Maybe I guess didn't even pay attention to that. But when I saw a film by Ridley Scott, I'm like, what? You know the big connection that Ridley Scott has with the Super Bowl.
What's that?
He directed the infamous 1984 Apple commercial.
Ah.
What was it for, the Mac? Was it from
Apple?
Apple, right? Apple computer. The amazing thing about that commercial is that it truly only aired that one time, and it's still, you know, all these years later, people, you know, you think it's such a memorable commercial that you think it's aired a bunch of times, that you've seen it a bunch of times, but it only, I mean, you can watch it online, obviously, now. But it only did air that one time during the Super Bowl, the 1984 Super Bowl. So, and Ridley Scott directed it. How about this? Bud Light. Special delivery. Continuing its medieval... Oh, this is with the corn syrup. This is... That was a good commercial. That was a good commercial. Again, you know, like the Pepsi commercial, going head-to-head with Coke. Here, they're naming light beer, and they're naming Coors Light and everything. I thought that was a funny commercial, where they got the giant thing of corn syrup. That was one of my favorites of the night. Continuing its medieval theme, Bud Light delivers what may be its best spot yet, a full frontal assault on light beer rivals for their choice of ingredients in this eminently simple beverage. A barrel of corn syrup shows up at the Bud Light Castle / Brewery, a place that may not be more advertiser's invention than historical fact. That's not ours. We don't use corn syrup, the monarch of the lower-calorie Budweiser says. Miller Lite does, says a woman. So this epic journey to correct the delivery mistake begins. At Miller Lite Castle, the travelers learn that Lite already has its delivery. Try the Coors Light Castle. They use corn syrup, too. So onward to, of course, the mountains. Coors Light guy is happy to see the barrel and then announced, to be clear, we brew Coors Light with corn syrup, posting a world with Interlite beer cooperation funny. It's even funnier to subvert that while the central digit extended toward the competition the commercial is actually delivering. Yeah, I thought that was a really clever commercial and really funny. I guess that this medieval stuff now is going to just stick, right?
With the it's the third year, right?
Dilly dilly. Dilly dilly. Simply Safe, Fear is Everywhere, gets a B+. The hot action in these days, tech these days, is in smart homes, from digitally controlled colored light bulbs to DIY home security systems. To get its message of home security across, Simply Safe shows a guy besieged by warnings about the outside world, from porch pirates to things you shouldn't eat to the dangers of your garage door. Somebody watches too much news, in other words, too much TV news. But the change in tone when you enter the guy's house protected by Simply Safe products gets the message across. Let's see. Pay TV series, The Handmaid's Tale and Game of Thrones. I don't usually cover TV and movie ads in this roundup, but The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu and especially Game of Thrones on HBO killed it with misdirection ads. First, scenes from the Hulu series about a dystopia where women are stripped of their personhood came as a jolt after an ad beginning by talking about all those things being rosy in America for women. Even better, the Game of Thrones ad spot began with what was, for all intents and purposes, a Bud Light ad, dilly dilly catchphrase and all, but the Bud Knight is knocked off his horse in a joust, and suddenly darkness and chaos and a dragon breathe heavy overhead, seemingly wiping out the entire ad scenario. But both were so effective because they started with standard Super Bowl commercial tropes, HBO going so far as to enlist the cooperation of Bud Light. Yeah, that Handmaid's Tale is a real uplifting show. I love it. You know, but Elizabeth Moss rules, but I mean, even just that commercial, I was like, oh man, it's coming back for a third season. Oh. But it is a great show. So, all right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We're talking about the commercials from the Super Bowl last night and some other memorable ones. If you want to jump in, phone lines are open. Text lines are open as well. 312-981-7200. Let's take a quick break for some weather. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows this with the opening bell and the great Steve Cochran at 6. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us. We've been talking about the Super Bowl ads from last night and some of the other great Super Bowl ads from the past that we're going to get into. Yeah, so there you go. And let's see, we were left off at The Handmaid's Tale and the Game of Thrones ads. And let's see. But, hey, by the way, Dan, who was MVP?
You know, that's a good question. I had not heard. I'm guessing Julian Edelman, but
that would have been that would have been clearly the right choice, right? I mean, how many passes did he get?
Yes, see, Super Bowl MVP. 10 catches, 141 yards.
Oh, man. All right. So back to the commercials here. T-Mobile will keep this brief. Got a B+. In the first of a series of ads about texting and unlimited data plans, the pink-themed service carrier is sharp. This one starts with a friend asking another how it's going, and then there's a wait, and then comes one of those epic return texts that you just don't know how to deal with. The clue is right at the start and with the phrase, "Well, I've been thinking a lot about my journey." This keenly observed, and T-Mobile punctuates it by promising for its most part to be brief. Those were the, that's the one that you mentioned earlier. There was a series of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those were all very clever. Those were very, very clever. Google, 100 billion words. Gives it a B+. Steve gives it a B+. The company that knows way too much about us plays against that image with a feel-good message rooted in its Google Translate service. More than 1 billion words get translated daily, the spot says, and they are on every topic imaginable. But you know what's the most translated? Yep, how are you, thank you, and I love you. Oh, now can I get my privacy back, please, Steve says. That was a pretty effective, that was a pretty effective commercial, though. One of those heartstring-tugging commercials. Persil, Deep Clean Level, says it got its C. The laundry detergent company delivers a standard consumer product ad that's almost as exciting as a virtually scoreless first half. Its most notable feature is that, like the very good Hyundai ad above, it begins with an elevator operator. One more, and it's a trend. That one, I mean, I think I remember the Persil ad. I mean, it wasn't very... it wasn't very memorable, obviously. I just remember not knowing what the... here's what I remember about that ad. I don't remember really much about it, except that I don't know what the product is. That's the only, I was like, oh, that's a thing? T-Mobile, what's for dinner? This is the same... this is what we were talking about before, the connecting one. And then TurboTax RoboChild. This is with the weird robot child. And Steve gives this one a B, too. The do-it-at-home tax assistant really wants us to know that it has an actual humans ready to help people before using its software, so it concocts a kind of funny, kind of creepy robo-child who really wants to be a TurboTax CPA helper when he grows up. Sorry, the humans explain, that's for people. In reaction, the machine kid gets the emotions all wrong. His emotions all wrong, and the TurboTax message is clear. So that this is the one is about not really trusting the robots. NFL, the 100-year game. A B. Did you like this one, Dan?
You know, I didn't actually get to see it, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's good. You'll like it. Convene for a 100th anniversary dinner. Some of the NFL's all-time greats are ready for a banquet dinner. Then the ball gets knocked off the cake. Somebody yells fumble and all heck breaks loose. There's tackling, there's throwing and catching, there are tables busted in two, and audience members get to play along, trying to recognize people usually depicted in helmets. This makes the NFL seem like a lot of fun, men playing a kid's game. At this troubled moment in its history, it's an image the league is wise to try and promote. All right, how about this one? The Kia Telluride. Give it everything. Got a B-. A kid with a thick southern accent stares into the camera talking about his small Georgia town of complete unknowns. And as a veteran Super Bowl ad viewers, you can get the sense that you're heading toward Eminem and Clint Eastwood and car company manifesto territory. We learned that this town got a plant that it's building the new Kia Telluride, which looks like a big SUV. We hope to be known for what we do, what we build, the kid says. Maybe the town will even use some of its new money to build a road so that such a shiny, nice, shiny vehicle won't have to keep driving through the river like that. I don't remember that one. Do you remember that, Ed?
I don't.
No.
I didn't say it, no.
T-Mobile, we're here for you. Got a B. In this amusing one, the texter says, I'm here for you, and the phone owner responds with heartfelt thanks because he's been having a tough time. Eric Carmen's All By Myself is the background, is the backdrop music. The first texter turns out to be his Lyft driver, and it looks like T-Mobile is giving away free Lyft rides on Tuesday. They are?
Yeah, and the taco sushi one, apparently they're doing a Taco Bell thing as well.
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing that at the bottom of the commercial, the logo for Taco Bell. Well, T-Mobile spent a lot of money this year, huh? On ads?
Yeah.
Verizon says the team that wouldn't be here got a C+. For the second straight year, Verizon uses its ad buy to salute first responders. In this case, the ones who helped Chargers coach Anthony Lynn after a terrible car wreck. There's a fine, touching story here, and what seems like real emotions as Lynn is reunited with some of the first responders who had helped him. I'm not sure, though, why it's Verizon's place to tell this story. With the Microsoft heart-tugging ad that aired afterward, it ties into a special video game controller that the company makes. Verizon doesn't even seem to be saying its equipment was important to the rescue. In a later ad, we at least learn Verizon commits to the concept, producing a series of 12 such stories you can watch online if having your heartstrings tugged by a telephone company is your thing. I thought that was a pretty effective ad. All right. A few more here, and then we're going to go into some classic Super Bowl ads, some of the best Super Bowl commercials of all time, if you guys want to jump in with that. Google, job search for veterans. Got a B from Steve. This well-made spot begins with close-ups of numbers on forms. Folks in the military, the 7% that keep the rest of us safe, know what these are, the narrator explains. And Google can help them find their next jobs, which is a nice thought, but maybe the people trying to keep highly trained people from quitting the military don't like it so much. Bud Light, Trojan Horse occupants. Got a B+. In more digs at Light's use of corn syrup, Bud Light gets us first medieval barbers, then guys in a Trojan horse. They're quick one-joke scenarios, but the jokes are good, especially in the barber's bowls. But they hammer home the point about what the rival puts in its beer. Burger King, eat like Andy. Hashtag eat like Andy. This was my favorite commercial of the night. This was absolutely my favorite commercial of the night. Yes, that really was Andy Warhol unwrapping a Whopper and trying to put ketchup on it. You can't complain about Warhol long dead being co-opted for commercial purposes if you might for other artists or indeed for beloved cult films. Warhol, after all, made his whole career about embracing and playing with consumerism, and you can still buy Warhol-branded tchotchkes galore in museum gift shops and give Burger King credit for finding this footage reportedly filmed in 1982 for the film 66 Scenes from America. I'm sure Heinz Ketchup is grateful, too, because of how prominently its bottle is featured. I thought the commercial was great. Just Andy Warhol trying to put ketchup on a burger. I don't know. I happen to be a really big fan of Andy Warhol, too, so that helps. But, like, I know, like, you could tell, again, you know, because as you're watching the game and you get all the commercials, you know, your news feed goes nuts during these things because everybody's tweeting or posting on Facebook during the game, live tweeting and all that stuff. And there was a general air of confusion after that commercial aired. People were just completely dumbfounded by it. And that's another reason why I liked it so much. Yeah, that was my favorite commercial. My favorite commercial of the night, the Andy Warhol commercial. That was my favorite one. Did you like that one, Dan?
Yeah, although I was part of that camp that was kind of like, what?
I also thought it was funny because, you know, at Burger King, they put ketchup on your burger. So I always thought it was like, wait a minute, why is he putting ketchup on the burger if you got a burger, you know?
And also to dip it, not...
Yeah.
Yeah.
He couldn't get the ketchup. For some reason, he didn't put it on the bun. And then he dips it into the... I don't know. I thought the commercial was hilarious. I thought it was great. So, T-Mobile. Dad? That gets a B. In this end of the series, Dad, we learn his texting requests for lasagna recipes to his kids. So this is another one. Man, oh man, T-Mobile spent a lot of dough, as I mentioned before. And then finally, the Washington Post. This is the one that was mentioned earlier. Democracy Dies in the Darkness. Tom Hanks narrated this one. Yeah, and that was very effective. So, all right. Hey, we're going to break, and then we got the news. And then after the news, we got the best Super Bowl commercials of all time. And we want to reminisce about those. So if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. The news is coming up right now. Yeah. Hello. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here. And we're here until 5 a.m. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke in just a few minutes because it's a jokey time on every Monday morning. He tells a joke. So that's going to be coming up here as well. We've been talking about the Super Bowl ads from this year and which ones were most memorable and which ones were most effective. And then every year, you know, they debut a bunch of big time commercials for the Super Bowl and spend a lot of money doing it. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Dan, did Coke have any commercials? I don't think they did.
That is a good question. Yeah, I don't know if they did.
I don't think they did, which is kind of unusual, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they've had some classic commercials in the past for the Super Bowl. Now, I know Pepsi did. I think Pepsi had two ads, at least, for last night's game. But, yeah. So we're going to dive into the best Super Bowl commercials of all time here in a couple of seconds. But I do want to mention, tomorrow night is my screening of Barefoot in the Park. Tomorrow night, I hope you guys can make it out. Great romantic comedy with Jane Fonda and Robert Redford, one of my favorite movies and my mom's favorite movie of all time. And it's at the AMC Rosemont 18. It's $10 to get in, and parking is free. The AMC Rosemont 18, formerly Movie Co., right out there in Rosemont. And, yeah, this is a great movie, a really, really funny movie. I think one of the funniest movies that Neil Simon has ever written. And it's wonderful. It's a romantic comedy. It's really, really cool. It starts at 8 o'clock. I will introduce it at 8 o'clock. We'll watch the movie together. And I've never seen it on the big screen, so I'm very, very excited to see Barefoot in the Park on the big screen. And then we'll talk about it afterwards, and I'll give some trivia and some facts about the making of the movie and all that cool stuff. So that's at 8 o'clock. But if you want to show up early... get there around 6 and go to the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, which is right down the street. They've got great food and a really great service. It's a really cool place, and it's just you know, just a couple of blocks away from the place. And they have a 15% off all food purchases just for the Nick D Film Club guys, all you guys. So just have like your ticket or your receipt, the proof that you're going to see Barefoot in the Park, and they will give you a 15% discount on all of your food, 15% discount. And also because it's Valentine's Day and it's a romantic comedy, they're going to have some special Valentine's Day dessert specials and some Valentine's Day themed drinks, all for you guys. So come on out, 6 o'clock, Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant, which is at the Crown Plaza O'Hare, right down the street in the hotel. 15% off all your food purchases. It's great. We've been having a lot of fun teaming up with these guys. So that'll be around 6 o'clock, and then we'll head back over to the movie theater at AMC Rosemont. And you can make your reservations now for your seats. So reserve your seats right now for tomorrow night's screening of Barefoot in the Park. And that's amctheaters.com. So pick out your seats right now, amctheaters.com. Reserve them right now, and they'll be waiting for you tomorrow night. And we're going to have a blast with this really, really funny Neil Simon romantic comedy and some great food at Murray Brothers Caddyshack beforehand. So it's going to be a fun evening, and I hope you guys can all make it out. Again, reserve your seats right now at amctheaters.com. Okay. All right, let's get back to the to these to the commercials. Dan, did Coke have a commercial?
Yeah, we got a couple calls and texts. Apparently, it aired very early, maybe the right before the first spot. It was animated. It was
I remember it now. It was like love. Coke is love, or something like that. It was all kinds of different, right? It was like a montage. Or...
Yeah, based upon what people are describing, that sounds right.
Yeah. Okay, now I remember that. Yeah. Well, you know, we're talking about the best Super Bowl commercials of all time, and speaking of Coke. One of the most legendary Super Bowl commercials of all time came from Coke, and that's Hey Kid, Catch from 1979. One of the most iconic Super Bowl ads of all time, this one-minute spot featured Steelers defensive tackle Mean Joe Green. A kid offers a limping Green a Coke as he heads to the locker room. Mean Joe isn't so mean after all when he throws the kid a jersey in exchange. That's one of the most, you know, that's absolutely one of the most popular and iconic Super Bowl commercials of all time. Wow, 1979. Jeez. Hard to believe. 40 years ago. That commercial's 40 years old. Wow. 1984, Wendy's, Where's the Beef? The expression became a national catchphrase. The ad appeared ahead of the big game. But that didn't stop it from catching fire when it aired during the Super Bowl. In the 1984 Democratic primaries, former Vice President Walter Mondale even used the catchphrase to criticize proposals from Senator Gary Hart. Yeah, where's the beef? That was everywhere. And, you know, that wasn't supposed to be the catchphrase. They thought that the catchphrase was going to be there's so much bun. They thought that that was going to be the catchphrase, but it turned out to be where's the beef. And Clara Peller was everywhere, man. She was everywhere. TV shows, you know, talk shows. You know, obviously they continued that theme with a bunch of Wendy's Where's the Beef commercials where they put Clara Peller in different situations, just have her scream, where's the beef? She was in a really, really terrible movie called Moving Violations. They even had her. She was in a couple of movies. But I remember Moving Violations was, oh my God, was that a terrible movie. It was about a bunch of drivers who got their license suspended and they had to go back to driving school. That's what the that's what the plot was. 1984, Apple went literal with this ad that was more a short film than commercial. In the ad, based on the dystopian novel 1984 by George Orwell, a jogger representing Apple knocks down Big Brother representing IBM. The ad was directed by filmmaker Ridley Scott, as we mentioned earlier. And I still remember that ad. I mean, like watching it, you know, my ex-girlfriend, we were at her family's house, my ex, and the room was full of people and everybody was silent. Everybody was just like, completely sort of mesmerized by that commercial, and nobody spoke during it. And then afterwards we were all like, wow, that was something. And again, only aired that one time. 1992, Pepsi with Cindy Crawford. This Pepsi ad used star power and sex appeal to turn the focus on its newly designed can with a surprise twist. The supermodel recreated the classic ad once again for another Super Bowl, because she looks exactly the same, Cindy Crawford. She hasn't aged at all. But that's the one where she goes up to the machine, right? The Pepsi machine, and gets a can of Coke.
Right.
Or a can of Coke. She goes to a Pepsi machine and gets a can of Coke. This is a classic one. 1993, McDonald's Horse. With Michael Jordan and Larry Bird playing horse. Sign us up to watch the epic showdown that helped popularize the phrase, nothing but net. The ad brought plenty of parodies and a remake in 2010 featuring LeBron James and Dwight Howard. That's classic. That's a classic commercial. Yeah. So that debuted at the Super Bowl. Okay. I don't know why I thought, where's the beef? Debuted not at the Super Bowl, but later. I don't know why. Just seemed like a summer thing to me. I don't know. Well, it lasted so long. I mean, it was just ridiculous. 1993, Nike with Michael Jordan and Bugs Bunny. Before Space Jam, there was an initial ad featuring Air Jordan and Hair Jordan. See what they did there? The Dream Team crossover featured the two fighting bullies on the court ahead of the 1996 classic Space Jam. Really? Is it Space Jam's a classic? Really? Is it? Really? Dan, is Space Jam a classic?
In certain circles.
Yeah. Okay. All right. 1995, Budweiser Frogs. Classic. Budweiser is a reliable Super Bowl spot, usually featuring the famous Clydesdales, but in this commercial before the horses became the common Super Bowl ad, the company went with amphibians, and a generation thought frogs made that sound. I remember the first time seeing that commercial. I laughed my butt off. I thought it was hilarious. And every time it was amusing. Every single time. They don't have the what's up on this featured on here, do they? Because that was something that was like a mid-90s thing, right? Early 90s, mid-90s? What's up?
Yeah, they do not.
But that's another one of those things that every single person was doing an imitation of that once that happened. So, all right. Okay, hang on, everybody. Give us a call, 312-981-7200, for your thoughts on the best Super Bowl commercials of all time. We've got some classics here that we're talking about, and we'll get back to that in just a few minutes. We're going to take a break here. We got weather, and then my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, and then we'll wrap up the show with some of the classic Super Bowl commercials from the past. 312-981-7200 is the phone number.
Ooh, it's the best part of the week, baby. It's time to hear something funny. With your music intro. Ah!
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Hey! What'd I say?
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Ah, yes! Here we go!
Yeah. That's right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Monday morning, and that theme, you know what that theme is, that, you know, my dad calls in and tells a joke every Monday morning, and that's what that theme is all about. Coming up, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. Let's get my dad here to talk to get a joke in, and here's my dad. Hey, Dad.
Hi, Nick.
How are you?
Good.
How's Mom?
She's doing well.
Good. All right, you got a joke.
Got a joke. Two old ladies are sitting on a bench waiting for the bus. One lady said, "I've been waiting for the bus so long, my butt fell asleep." The other lady said, "I know, I can hear it snoring."
All right. All right.
That's a good one, Dad. Thanks.
All right. All right, Nick.
See you later.
Bye.
I could hear it snoring. All right.
That was jokey, jokey, jokey time. It was a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad told a joke.
Yep, and he'll do it again next Monday. Right here on 720 WGN. So, all right. We are talking about the best Super Bowl commercials of all time. Right now, by the way, Dan, Channel 9 is showing Marcus on Le Shock Value is showing the 100 years of NFL where they tear up the room and just, but you have to see it. It's really funny.
Check it out.
It's really funny. So there you go. By the way, did you know that Saints fans protested the Super Bowl?
Yeah, you know, one of our texters actually just texted in. Did you see the Saints people who were parading during the show, game?
They didn't watch the game. They had like a party outside, and they had any excuse for, you know, for New Orleans people to go outside and party. You know, that didn't. I mean, they have a parade at the drop of a hat in New Orleans. But yeah, so there were a bunch of they set up like an outdoor concert, and they weren't watching the Super Bowl. I think that's hilarious. They didn't miss much either. Oh man. Okay. Let's see. Let's get back to these commercials. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We're talking about the best Super Bowl commercials of all time. The 1998 Tabasco Mosquito, that's one of my favorites. That's actually one of my favorite commercials. If only the hot sauce had this effect on mosquitoes in real life. For those people, you got to remember this one. The dude's eating a slice of pizza. He's sitting on a porch. He's eating a slice of pizza, and there's a mosquito on his leg. And so he pours some extra Tabasco sauce on the pizza, takes a bite, and the mosquito sucks out the blood and then flies away and explodes. And explodes as he flies away. And then the guy just smiles, too. He's like all satisfied. And I don't think there's a word in that commercial. Like, there's no voiceover or anything. I think it's just completely silent. And it's just what you see. That's a great commercial. I have no idea who came up with it, but it's a great commercial. From 1999, Monster.com. When I grow up, everyone dreams of what they can be when they grow up. Monster.com put a two-reel spin on the classic question with kids saying adult phrases like climbing up the middle management and being a yes man. If only job boards had positions for astronauts, ballerinas, and everything else kids want to be. Is Monster.com still a thing? Is that still a thing? It is, right?
I want to say they're still around, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. 2000 says the E-Trade monkey. Nothing says a waste of millions of dollars like 30 seconds of watching a monkey dance. Actually, it's the best use of money, but E-Trade illustrated a great point for their online investment business with this Super Bowl spot. So it's just a monkey dancing, right? You can't go wrong with that. You can't go wrong with a monkey dancing. Uh, 2010, Snickers, when you're not you when you're hungry. You're not you when you're hungry introduced new fans to Hollywood icon Betty White and gave way to an ad campaign that's still going. It's since featured celebrities like Aretha Franklin, Liza Minnelli, and Elton John. Yeah. Classic. Um, 2010 says Old Spice, the man you can smell like diamonds, boats, and horses. What more can you ask for from a body wash? Thanks to Old Spice for giving girlfriends everywhere even more unrealistic expectations. 2011, Volkswagen, the Force. Oh, this is a great commercial. This is a great commercial. I love this commercial. Volkswagen unveiled the ad before the Super Bowl, now a common practice for companies looking to make a splash. But in 2011, the decision created crazy buzz thanks to the good-natured ad that Star Wars fans and non-fans could smile about. That's where the kid thinks that he starts the car because he thinks he has the Force. He starts the car, but it's the automatic. You know, the Volkswagen has the automatic starter that you can start the car from inside. I love that commercial. I really do. I really think that commercial is adorable, and it still holds up. Hey, what about the Puppy Monkey Baby? Did that debut in the Super Bowl?
Yes, it did.
I love the Puppy Monkey Baby. I know everybody hates the Puppy Monkey Baby, but I like the Puppy Monkey Baby, and that's like Mountain Dew, right? Like Extreme?
Yep.
Puppy Monkey Baby. 2012 area code Chrysler, halftime in America. American screen star Clint Eastwood narrated the American automobile industry rebounding from the Great Recession with images of American workers appearing in the video. The commercial appeared during halftime. That was a pretty that was pretty memorable, those commercials. And then they really went to town on SNL with Bill Hader, because Bill Hader, you know, does a fantastic Clint Eastwood. And half of Bill Hader's imitation of Clint Eastwood is hiking his pants up as far as he can go. And in that series of commercials that they kept going, you know, like the Saturday after the Super Bowl, the following Saturday after the Super Bowl, they did those series of commercials throughout the episode of SNL. They would cut away, and every single commercial, his pants would be higher. His pants would be higher. Oh, I totally forgot that Toy Story 4. They had a trailer for Toy Story 4, too. Um, 2015, Always Like a Girl. Always flipped a sexist stereotype on its heels and showed the strength of doing something like a girl. It was a welcome break from the hyper-masculinity of the day and advocated for female empowerment. And 2018, NFL Dirty Dancing with Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr. Last season's most memorable commercial didn't come from a paying sponsor. Instead, viewers were given laughs when quarterback Eli Manning and wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. recreated the famous scene from Dirty Dancing, Time of Our Lives Indeed. I remember that. I remember that. Yeah. And what about, was there an ad? I know because Eli and Peyton were in a couple of ads together, right? Weren't they in a couple of ads together?
I mean, there was a couple build-up ads to that one
where,
like, that was much, you know, like, that was the payoff ad at the end. And there were, you know, them doing various things in commercials before it.
Okay.
They also did a pizza ad, I want to say, in New York. Like, they...
Both brothers? Peyton and Eli?
No.
Odell?
That was Odell.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, I forget what the deal was, but he was delivering pizzas in a park.
Oh, right. I remember that. Well, overall, this year, game not great, right?
Game not great.
Commercials pretty good.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was so overall, it was, I guess, all right. I wonder what the ratings would be like.
Yeah, and I think they're, you know, especially from halftime on, would be really interesting to find out.
Yeah. Yeah. I would imagine people are curious about what Adam Levine would do, but then maybe tune out after that because the game was not very exciting. And also, I mean, you know, the network is always, in the NFL and the network are always happy when it's coast teams that are playing because obviously the ratings are going to be better, you know. And so this was LA, you know, LA, Boston. So the ratings, you know, there's a lot of people who will be watching the game. But so we'll see. But overall, not a hugely exciting football game. But Tom Brady gets another ring. Belichick, how many is that for him now?
I believe they both have six.
They both have six now. Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, there you go. That's the Super Bowl. Those were the ads and all that cool stuff. All right. Why don't we take a break? What do we got going on tomorrow?
Tom Appel.
Oh, good. Tom Appel will be here. Any and all of your car-related questions, he will answer them for you. All right. The news is coming up right after this.